My name is Gary Butterfield, he, him.
My name is Kay Ross, she, her.
And we're just recording a little wrapper thing in case you're wondering why this is on your feed or the news didn't reach you. As we're recording this last week, we lost Jeremy Greer, one of our friends who we met through our shows, through Bonfireside Chat, and who was a host on the network and everything. And we thought people, you know, one of the things about Jeremy is, in addition to being a close friend, he was great.
Yeah.
He was really good on podcasts, very funny, very insightful, plugged up a lot of holes in our knowledge base.
Yes.
And stuff. So we thought, and he, you know, I wrote a big thing on Patreon about this, but one of the things about Jeremy is he loved podcasts.
Yep.
He absolutely loved this medium. He did as many as we do, and he's only one person.
Yep.
We thought we would rerun the Jeremy files, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, not to be confused with non-human biologics. So these are the Jeremy appearances. If you want to listen to kind of a chronology of him being on the shows.
Yeah.
And revisit those appearances.
Yeah. Just go back, listen to him being great. You know, just wanted to do this in remembrance.
Yeah. He cared about having his podcast stuff around.
Yep.
After he passed. So, you know, we're doing our part for his Duck Feed appearances here, I guess.
Yes.
And in case anybody wanted to listen back, save you the trouble of having to search through the archives.
Yeah, yeah. So,
yeah, give a listen.
These will be hitting the feed. I don't know if it's going to be all at once or kind of all in rapid succession. But yeah, just that is why you're seeing this stuff.
Yeah. And if you're not interested in that and everything, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Just ignore them. That's the thing. But if you are, here they are. And yeah.
Some of our landings were desperate adventures. We are now prepared to meet the inevitable counterattacks with power and with confidence.
Prince Lothric is in your hands. Please save his soul. Tell him what he must be, a lord.
My name is Gary Butterfield.
My name is Cole Ross.
And I'm Jeremy Greer.
And you're listening to Bonfireside Chat. It is a pilgrim favorite.
And this week we are talking about Lothric Castle. And as you heard, we are joined by Jeremy Greer of just so many things. Jeremy, welcome.
Thank you. It's nice to be back. You guys bring out the comfortable chairs for Bonfireside Chat, so I really like being here.
Yep. Prior to recording, you talked about how you're sitting on pillows on the floor.
Look, nobody needs to know the details of how I record a podcast, Cole.
Don't tell anyone how I live my life.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's definitely coming out. That's prime extra show material, along with me and Cole reading from our cushion insert fan fiction. About what it'd be like to be one of those cushions, Jeremy.
If you think the cushions are good, you should see the yellow cake that I sat on earlier.
Oh, wait, you're not Jeremy Greer from CakeSquatters.com, are you?
Yes, I own CakeSquatters.com. I had to squat to get the CakeSquatters.com domain name.
Yeah. Dark Cake Squatters.
Yet that is exactly. Tumblr.com. Yet that is exactly what I see here.
Yeah.
Just look up who is. It has my phone number.
Yeah. He's very public about it. Listen, there's two things I do. Podcasts and cake squats.
You guys have seen my Facebook. It's nothing but cake squats and podcasts. That's it.
Yeah, man. This is the podcast where we sit on cakes.
Yep.
And also so you may know Jeremy. He is a longtime alum. He has been on this show since the beginning, since first season. We've had him on at least once per season. And then, Jeremy, talk about other stuff that you do. How are you related to Dark Souls in your myriad ways?
I used to do a lot of PvP videos, and I used to collect hate mail on darksoulshaters.tumblr.com. Dark Souls PvP is weird now, so I don't get a lot of hate mail. And I actually got some this week and then posted it and then immediately lost 30 followers. So I'm thinking that maybe the market has changed. more recently, I do Don't Give Up Skeleton, which is a podcast inspired by podcasts like yourselves and Twin Humanities, who would have guests on and say, the very first question is like, how did you get into Souls? And I wanted to do a series of podcasts with people that kind of dig into that. Also do Dark Insight, and then we also do Days of Future Cast on the Duck Feed Network, mm-hmm. and I think that might be it. Also, I have a Twitter.
Well, that stuff comes at the end, Jeremy. You listen to this enough.
Don't get greedy. Come on.
Yeah, don't get off your high cake for once in your life, buddy.
You know what they say about cakes? You sit high, we sit low.
Yeah. The reason, you know, the timing on this couldn't be better because you are the newest addition to the official host family of the network, and with the show you and I do together about mm-hmm. the X-Mans.
About all of the X-Mans. I'm very excited about it.
Yeah,
me too. That show comes out every other Saturday.
Yeah. So
check that out. And we're having you on to talk about Lothric Castle. Cool. What did we do? Oh, and we're super glad to have you. I feel like I know Jeremy too well to be obsequious to him the way that I might somebody else. Like, it feels weird to just be like, God, it is good to have you, of course.
Yeah.
Like, that, it's not that it's not good. It just feels like it's not, like, doesn't need to be stated.
It's like the third time that a guest comes over to your house. You're like, you're not a fucking guest anymore. You're family. Go get your own beer.
Take off your goddamn shoes.
Yeah. I'm not going to.
If you need to do laundry here, it's fine.
Yeah. No, this is, even if we were obsequious, it would be the fifth or sixth time, and it would start to wear thin, I think.
Yeah, I actually have a bone to pick, because you guys schedule me after like the roughest guest that you do. Like, this time it's Vadi. Yeah. Last time it was Illusory Wall. The time before that was Bob Mackie. Like, you guys get like high well-known people, and then have like me right after, I guess. I don't know what the point of that is besides to make me feel bad.
Everybody needs a chance to go to the bathroom. Like, they're always going to play, you know, some song from the new album after the hit, so everybody can go to the bathroom, you know. Nobody wants to go to the bathroom during this. This is the High Wall of Lothric.
No, it's Lothric Castle.
Lothric Castle, yeah. Then people go to the bathroom because there's not that much. That's not intentional.
No.
Not by a long shot.
Gary, you had started asking me what we did last time. And what we did last time, kind of weird, because we very much kind of like got into this area and then did an end around into crazy optional kind of stuff. But last time, so let's just assume, we just defeated our third Lord of Cinder, and we have been teleported to the High Wall of Lothric by Emma, the High Priestess, saying, yo, I'm about to die. Please save Prince Lothric's soul. And so mm-hmm. we defeated the Dancer of the Boreal Valley. And then that side stuff is we went to see what the king's doing, and then also found some things in the Untended Graves that were very kind of like cosmologically upsetting. But now we have set our sights on Prince Lothric himself. But this is not going to be easy.
Yeah, it's a long road.
Yeah.
And this is explicitly the end game. Mm-hmm. You know, we got two areas left to the end and then one optional area, and we're there. As we said in the last episode and in the first episode where we talked about the High Wall, even though the spoiler wall was there, so we weren't that explicit about it, but Lothric is a kingdom that's kind of has this war going on. The king is absent. The prince has decided not to do his duty. And there are these war between the angels and the knights. The castle itself is also set up for siege, either against the angels or against us. We're not entirely sure. Forces from the Boreal Valley, could be any number of things. And there were also the skies filled with these pilgrim butterflies,
yes.
Which I think we mentioned briefly last time, but are more key at this point and make my blood boil in a way that like does not speak well of this. And we'll talk about those guys later.
Yeah.
But it is a place of chaos. It is set up for bear in the most kind of fierce way that we've seen since, I don't know, Boletaria 1-3, you know,
which is what this quotes.
Almost explicitly.
Very much explicitly in the area after that we'll be talking about today, like very much explicitly.
And I'm making a joke, but that is something where like, I like this area kind of on the whole. And one of the things I like about it is those kind of quotes work so much better for me than Sigurd's of the world. Like this kind of architectural or gameplay quote, mm-hmm. where it's like, okay, this reminds me of this level design. I'm pretty into that.
And told that me I wasn't supposed to say the S word on this podcast. Is that open? We can say C word now.
Gary, I'm going to have to beat that now.
we've left C word in the dirt, but this is Kirk. You know, this works better for me as a callback than Kirk does.
Yeah,
sure,
for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So this area has changed. We, again, alluded to this a little bit, but like on returning to this place, it's a little bit like in Bloodborne when the Blood Moon comes out. You know, the entire tenor, the quality of light is altered as, you know, Lothric is experiencing this eclipse. The sky itself looks to be on fire. The sun, very startlingly, is blotted out, leaving only a rim that resembles a dark sign. At least superficially. And then we have these large skeletal butterflies that are kind of like listing kind of very slowly above the castle. It's a pretty sweet skybox. Like, it's a cool image to like look at, and it is kind of an epic an epic scene that it sets, at least when you first appear and look up.
It's metal as fuck.
Yes.
And it's really, really metal. Yeah, it's very metal. And that quality of light is very like, again, very Beksinski, kind of like hellscape, queasy orange, kind of thing. I really, really love. And the dark sign in the sky, like that was a jaw dropping moment for me. Mm-hmm. Like when I saw that, and I was like, oh shit! Like this, you know. I've talked a lot about in the season about Dark Souls 3 trying to sell urgency that I don't usually feel in things, and this was actually like a brief kind of moment of feeling it. Whereas, like, this does seem like it's on another scale than what we've seen before, unlike so many other things when it's told me that we're on a different scale. You know, like, this actually, I can feel it. Like, this does seem apocalyptic in a way that the series hasn't.
Yeah, the world itself is laboring under this cursed mark.
Mm-hmm. This made me think that, like, this world was actually going to end. Like, before I got to the endings, or had even looked up, like, all of the various endings you can do, like, seeing the sky and seeing the sun made me think, like, oh, shit. This is actually the last Dark Souls game.
Yeah, it's like
we're about to, this is going to be it.
It's too late. Like, all we can do now is maybe stop the bleeding, but probably not even that.
Yeah. That gigantic dark sign in the sky too, it's worth noting. Richard Pilbeam, show alum and friend of the show, pointed out that the kind of fire that's behind it actually kind of spirals. And he was thinking of it, I always just kind of thought of it as this kind of like seeping hole, but he was saying it was more like a drain that was sucking in, which is kind of interesting. The idea of it literally kind of drinking in the world. I don't necessarily think that, I don't necessarily buy that, but it's kind of an interesting way to think about it. It looks so much like a seeping wound to me, though.
Yeah.
And that has parity with the brands that we get.
Yeah.
You know, that just kind of never stop leaking our humanity out of it.
Yeah, the bottomless holes on people's flesh. Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty great. Like, I mean, that is all good shit. The castle itself, which we're going to talk about kind of going through in a more traditional episode, since there is less of that to talk about, but there are a couple things.
Right.
So first, we're in this kind of basement floor kind of chapel area. You climb up this ladder after the dancer and go into this chapel room with statues of bodies laying at rest on the ground.
Yeah. It's like they decided to preserve people who were kind of like laying in state in this very kind of like grid-like fashion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I don't know if this is a sick room. Like, it feels weird. This imagery is repeated over and over in this as well. Like, there are a couple different places where this happens, and again, around the edges here we actually see statues of these knights in various states of cutting off their own heads, either copy paste of the one that we saw on the way up here, or ones that are holding their heads as though they're presenting you with a fine squash.
Yeah. I really thought that this area was going to be more than it was, based on like just walking in here and seeing the like broken statuary on the ground about like what looks like graves to me, or some sort of representation of past knights. And then like there's an altar at the front that has like this really cool looking sword on it, that, or towards the back rather. And I was like, man, this sword, like, this seems weird to have just like a sword laying here. Like, I wonder if they, and I started doing my Dark Souls thing. I wonder if they worship this sword. I wonder if the sword is handed down. And then like throughout the level, you can see like four more of that exact same setup. And I'm like, okay, so it doesn't mean anything at all. Gotcha. Cool. Cool.
I can't even get that sword. All right.
There is a little bit of like current console generation copy paste, environmental busyness going on in this area. Which is, is a personal, bone to pick that I have with PS4 era video games, and is not, this is not the worst offender at it. It goes in order of games I've played of like Arkham Knight, Bloodborne, than this probably.
Yeah.
But it is a little bit like noisy in a way that I don't like, doesn't add to the sense to me. Like, it makes these kind of statues, just having more of them doesn't make it feel more important to me. Right. You know, it just, it kind of takes me out of it. It makes the, have a little bit less of a sense of place to me rather than more.
Yeah.
You know, the, this kind of clutter.
And once that detail is reduced to noise, what we're left with is kind of illogical spaces that are just set up for the encounters, which is fine. I like the encounters in this level, but there's so little that you can read about the way this space kind of unfolds.
Yeah. And that is a little bit weird and frustrating to me. Also, you know, speaking of weird and frustrating, so this first little area, that sword thing Jeremy was talking about, is by the bonfire. Before you get to that, though, we get to what I think is one of the tougher enemies in the game. I have a really hard time with these guys, which are these kind of red-eyed Lothric knights. They're not the same ones that were patrolling outside.
Right.
There's one of these right outside tending a grave, which I don't know what that guy, or tending a dead soldier there, or a dead suit of armor, or whatever it is. But these guys are all backed up by these priests that will buff them and heal them. And these guys are real son of a bitches. I have a really hard time with these guys. Like, and it is just really like an it's very similar to the Irithyll crew, like unlimited stamina, cannot stagger them. You know, and that becomes pretty frustrating for them, for me, fighting these guys. And they have a lot of health, especially if that buff goes off.
If you don't get to this caster earlier, you're kind of screwed. It's weird because I've seen you say this on Twitter, too, that you can't stagger them. And like, I was using the battle axe and I could like keep them pretty much stunlocked in like 3 or 4 hits.
It would depend on their weapon, and it could be have to do with their buff or what move they're using. They will gain hyper armor with certain swings that they have been able to do outside of my, you know, in between swings of my stun. So it doesn't happen. I can stun them for a cycle. I mean, it takes multiple cycles of me using, at least on this build, me draining my own stamina. Like, I have to drain my stamina in hits multiple times to kill these guys. And that could be, again, just kind of a non-optimized build. Like, I switched from my luck build to a dex build, and it's like, it's bleed focused. That has never procced on these guys for me, possibly because they're breaking out of it and hitting me before I can kind of keep the pressure up. But I mean, you can stun them. I can't stun them consistently enough to make them manageable with those tactics. They also have a tether to their priest, like where if you know, they won't get far enough away from the priest to make it, you know, the priest also takes a little, either a little bit more than one or a full stamina bar of hits for me to kill them. This kind of squishy caster has a lot of hit points. So I found these guys immensely frustrating, and it's weird because it's a huge difficulty wall in this first section, and then you get to kind of regular enemies for the middle, and then a huge difficulty wall right at the end as well. For me, at least. I mean, again, like, you know, Dark Souls games find each player's weakness, but these guys are hard for me.
It sounds like that didn't end up being that much of a problem for you, Jeremy, though.
I'm using the Dark Souls 3 cheat mode, which is a strength build.
Okay.
So you just two-hand an axe and like literally hit anything and it dies. I mean, it's still like, it's just like Gary was saying, like, it still takes like more than one stamina bar worth of, you know, hits to kill him. But I was also playing on New Game 2 because I was doing stupid, you know, trophy runs with this dude. So that's just what I had available to me. I think they're super tough, and the way that they are staggered throughout this level is like, it's very specific. Like, it feels like some of the best enemy placement in the game to me, but also it's just really, really brutal. Like, the very first time I walked through this, not walked through it, I played through it, was with the sorcerer build, and that was garbage, and I literally had to run past everything. I just couldn't do any damage whatsoever. It was miserable. And I just ran from bonfire to bonfire, which, I mean, is a way to play Dark Souls, but not exactly like the way that you want to play. So
it's definitely not savoring it. To pile on with kind of how unsatisfying these guys are, at least for me. So I'm doing a strength build this time as well. I've got a heavy greatsword that I'm using. Even then, these guys get under my skin more than the Boreal Dancer guys do, like the Dancer Knights. Just because those guys, they'll get into a combo, you can see it, and then once they're in it, they're kind of committed to it. So it ultimately kind of like works out to just kind of these very predictable strings of attacks that if you can avoid it, you're fine. These guys, they can kind of fire from the hip, even down to, you know, if you're trying to not angle for a backstab, but just kind of like get around them to, you know, get into a better position, you can be pretty damn near behind them and they'll do a shield bash on you to like get you out and then follow that up with an attack, which just feels like a kick to the balls.
Also, what feels like a kick to the ball to me is the fact that they have this buff.
Yeah.
They use weapon arts and they have a buff that they do. And like when they're buffed, like I've had them one shot me from 85% of my health on that buff. You know, and it's possible like maybe it was a counter hit, like I was in the middle of an animation. Like there could have been other things, but I've been nearly topped off and just had them one shot me with that stupid fucking glowing sword.
Yeah.
And they're hard enough without that. Like it doesn't, to me, this is past the line of presenting an interesting kind of tactical challenge and more just, you know, frustrating. So but, on other, most playthroughs, I end up doing the same thing Jeremy did with Sorcerer, where like, you know, I try to do everything in the game once, you know, so I try to clear every enemy on my first run through, you know, everything has to die. And then I can skip stuff I don't like on later run throughs. This one, every time these guys show up, I just run past them.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think they're fun to fight. And I, the later encounter with two of them, fuck you. Like that is far too much to actually be in the mix of it without just like, taking advantage of their tethers.
But by later, you know, do you mean the very next thing we do?
No, not the two on the stairs, the two with casters. Right before, right in that big kind of grand chamber before the boss.
The ones
on the stairs, like, and there's a bonfire right there. It almost feels like, and the bonfire is so close to this one.
Yeah.
It almost feels like, oh, you're just meant to get to that bonfire and then never do this part again.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, it is.
Or
it just
like
feels
to call
poorly
it Dark
tuned
Souls
to
2 level design.
It's 100%, but without Dark Souls 2 poise and armor upgrades or healing gems or anything that Dark Souls 2 does to design around having brief, hard encounters between bonfires.
Yeah.
You know, it is a lot like a Dark Souls 2 bonfire to bonfire run, but with none of the actual game design considerations that Dark Souls 2 did to make that work.
What frustrates me is I like the idea of this. I like the idea of the buffing. I just do not like the execution. I think that it is, you know, something that is really hard to surmount.
It's frustrating because later they actually do something that I really love in video games. After that, so you find the two of them on the stairs after this, and then get to the bonfire with the sword that we talked about. This actual kind of, and then there's this super pointless shortcut that goes down from there. Like, what is the point of that?
That actually that was useful for the run to the Dragon Slayer armor because of the elevator that you could open up. You go back to this bonfire as the one you're going to run from, run across there. You can avoid aggro really easily, get into the elevator, and that takes you right up to the fog wall, as opposed to doing the run from the Dragon Barracks.
The run from the Dragon Barracks, like you just run past two guys that will never see you. Like that was just as easy for me. Like I never have to fight those two guys with the casters.
I mean,
I guess it's slightly different in that one of them brings you by one set of a guy with a caster. The other one brings you by two with a caster.
Yeah.
But either way, I'm running past them. I don't have to fight them.
Yeah.
Like they ended up being about the same amount of time or less time actually to not do the elevator.
Yeah. I always send the elevator back down as I get to the top.
No, I mean just waiting for it to go up. Like riding on it takes more time than it takes to run through that other room.
That's just that's what I used it for, so I wanted to come to this brief little shortcuts defense at the very least.
I mean and even then you could take the rather than going from that bonfire, why not go from the dancer one, which is just climbing a ladder rather than falling down a thing, you know, if you want to use
because
that elevator.
Climbing ladders are so slow.
it's a 7-foot ladder though. Like it is the shortest ladder in the game. Like it is really shitty bonfire placement that
perception
feels like
is
it was
reality.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, you could use it. I bet you if you time it out, it is actually not quicker, which is fine. You know, like perception is reality, but this seems like bad design at this point to me. Yeah. Between that bonfire being there and that shortcut being there, like this is sloppy.
Okay.
But
it feels like they realized that it was going to be right next to each other, so made it, but it doesn't actually really like, it's not that useful. They were just like, oh yeah, we can totally put a drop down here because they're right next to each other. That'll be easy.
Yeah. Yeah,
more so than like actually considered a like actual shortcut. So
yeah, it was an unsatisfying shortcut when I found it. But what I was gonna say is after this point, when you could actually get to this battlement run, This level actually does one of my favorite things that video games can do, and we talked about it in Watch Out for Fireballs. We recently did Resident Evil 4. We recorded that thing. Is take old enemies and remix them in ways to be interesting. Mm-hmm. So rather than just giving everything a million hit points and having it do a million damage, the next kind of stretch is almost entirely enemies that we got, you know, that we fought 1,000 times that are pretty easy. They're slightly buffed from the beginning of the game, but it's all about their arrangement and ambush design that makes them hard. And this is like sublime.
Yeah.
Like this next stretch is some of the best like encounter design in the game, I think. Mm-hmm. It's just so weird to have them rubbing up right, like, oh, this is just like throw a bunch of, you know, ultra damaging meat walls against you with pointless shortcuts and really close bonfires, and then this section, which is great, you know, right after it.
Yeah.
It's very strange.
Yeah. So the components of this kind of run up the battlements here are, again, things that we've seen before, like these hollow warriors. We also have several like crossbowmen. And people kind of like hiding behind these little temporary cover kind of things like we would see in Bulletaria 1-1. And then the kind of heavies here are the larger hollow warriors that use the axes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then this is coupled with snipers.
Yes.
So they 100% are like those guys can. I mean, they're definitely ramped up from the beginning of the game. Like they can, you know, three shot you. They can combo you to death here. But it's. Their windups and stuff like that are not ramped up. They can't, fire from the hip like the Lothric Knights can. Mm-hmm. There's also, these are coupled with people using the Lloyd's Talismans against you.
Yep.
The Undead Hunter Charms pretty consistently. So, but they're really devious. Like the way that they're placed is very like kind of puzzly in a way that I really like.
And so the trick that they're going to get you into, or the trap that they're trying to lure you into, is, you know, the way up is pretty straightforward. And there are a couple of these other small little battlements you can go down to, kind of at the top of these turrets in order to pick up items and stuff. Whenever you go lower, anybody who's above you can start firing off those Lloyd's Talismans, or the Undead Hunter Charms rather. And then that sets you up to just kind of be, you know, cut off from the back.
Yeah. It just ambush city for this entire stretch.
Did you guys try and jump off of that one battlement because you saw the roof below you thinking, hey, there's probably something down there, and then just fall through it because it's scenery?
I used a prism stone, but I mean, same thing.
Yeah, but it's kind of like, oh, that's... Damn it, Gwendolyn, you have...
Yes, he's got me again. If only I had wings. The lore implications.
Ooh.
Somebody probably took that seriously. On their way here, we find a couple interesting items and encounters, too, that are kind of lore significant. So we find Prince Lothric's swaddling clothes, the prayer set, which are the only clothes he's ever worn, other than the ones he's wearing when we see him, I guess.
Yeah.
Kind of tells a little bit of his backstory. He was born sickly, but he was always fated to be a lord. This was kind of this thing he was born into.
Right.
There's also this weird little watchtower kind of section with a winged knight actually in it.
Right.
We fought these guys before. There's that kind of fountain encounter on the high wall, but they're a little bit tougher here, and we'll eventually, you know, this is not even their final form.
No.
Like, we eventually will fight a tougher version.
Yeah. It's a little bit easier here. At least I found it easy because inside this watchtower, you can climb up a ladder and then do drop attacks on him, which, you know, two or three of those, and he was kind of done for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The kind of weird part up here is that hidden behind this an illusory wall is kind of this, you know, shrine to these winged knights, where we'd only see a painting of one of them apparently wearing sandals. I couldn't quite figure out his footwear stees, but then also you find a shield and the wing knight set.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the painting was done by Rob Liefeld, and he can't draw feet, so that's why he likes sandals.
So I mean, that's how you can kind of see, again, rather than just copy pasting 1,000 statues, this is a good kind of way, you know, telling what this culture valued, right? Because the style of this painting. One, it's hidden away, so it's kind of has the sense of it being like a hidden place, but it's definitely aggrandizing these guys. Mm-hmm. And the guy who is in front, where you get the set, is a guy who is sitting cross-legged, just kind of staring at it. And you get the sense that he died kind of, you know, lusting after it or looking at it.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just equipment. It's equipment found on a corpse that was staring at this beautiful expression of, like, you know, this is what peak performance looks like.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. It's pretty interesting.
So the Wind Knight set confirms details that we think we alluded to obliquely back during the High Wall episode, which is that they serve somebody named Gertrude and that they are part of a faction called the Angels. And they are not one of the three pillars. So them assuming any kind of power in Lothric is, you know, kind of seen as insubordination or insurrection. This combined with the fact that the Sacred Bloom Shield, which we find here, which has kind of a sacred flame, front and center on it, is kind of related to the Way of White, actually reveals, I think, maybe a little bit more, it says more to me than it actually looks like on the surface by that, like about who the Angels were kind of aligned with Way of White being, you know, Gwyn's religion nominally, and possibly with the connections of Guinevere from here and what we know about Gertrude possibly being the disavowed daughter, the princess.
I mean, there's a lot of things that lead to that.
Yeah.
You know, the shield is not necessarily what makes me think that they are aligned with Gertrude and she might be the daughter. You know?
Well, they're explicitly aligned with Gertrude because of their armor. But this is this is one of the first, like, they put these two next to each other. That is like, okay, I want to take note of that connection at the very least. I understand there's more later.
Yeah, for sure. Like, it is, I think that is the consensus and probably true.
Yeah.
You know, I think that, and this is, I would agree that this is like some of the early hinting at that, because at this point, I can't remember if we had any mention of Gertrude before this, but like, she's going to be really important, but only really from here on out.
Yep.
You know, like we knew about these angels, we knew a little bit about the war, but like, boy, this episode and next episode is just going to be Gertrude City, here we come, you know, and Gertrude is aligned, like these Angels of Lothric end up being like one of the big kind of lore mysteries of Dark Souls 3, you know, like we kind of understand them a little bit as a faction, but we don't know goals or, you know, we don't know goals really. You know, we really don't know exactly where they came from and what they are. There's a lot of like little connections and hints, you know, there's like, we're going to find statuary later that kind of suggests some things. We know they're associated with the Way of White, which would probably want, you know, Lothric to link the flame. So like we get, there's a little bit of that, but it's not a complete sentence in a way that feels to me like, needs to be addressed in a DLC. Same thing with the Londor stuff. Like Angels, Londor, Profane Flame are the big mysteries that I really feel like need to be kind of addressed there. For me at least, like I have an idea of it, but it's not a satisfying idea or a complete one, you know?
Yeah.
So
it's too much work for the DLC. Like, I feel like everything that anytime a conversation comes up about Dark Souls 3, it always ends with, well, maybe the DLC will take care of it. And I'm just, I think I've said this before, I'm so worried that like, it's just going to be like something completely unrelated. Like, oh, hey,
yeah,
you know, now it's just a short story all by itself and people are going to get so mad on the internet.
It is a lot of pressure for any DLC to actually sustain, but it's like that would complete the picture, you know, like it's the reason why people want that. Like, it doesn't necessarily mean that's going to happen. There's just hope in their hearts that maybe is misguided and misplaced, you know? I generally sound cranky about this game a lot of the time, but this area really puts a lot of things in sharp relief for me as far as cranking out, you know, this is where like a lot of those kind of mysteries come home to roost. And like, as much as I can like a lot of the gameplay stuff and a lot of the set piece stuff can be very beautiful, this is one of the areas where it's not like one of the first areas where the lore becomes unsatisfying to me, but it's one of the areas where it's most acute.
Yeah. Well, where it's positioned and then even its name makes it feel like it's going to be the fireworks factory, right? You know, compare this to Dranglake Castle, which was a little bit of a disappointment, but it was a very atmospheric, cool disappointment, and that kind of ended up being the point. You know, the king wasn't here. It was this big, empty place. And here, there's like a little bit of that, right? Like, okay, well, Lothric isn't in the castle proper. We need to go even further than we already did. But like, there's a lot of expectation for this bottleneck kind of place that is the castle of the kingdom we've been, well, not focusing on for the majority of this time, but at least, you know, kind of walked into, right, as kind of being the centerpiece of this world.
If it wasn't for the sidebar about Eldritch, like this would be the you know, the that point.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just a weird kind of that kind of bifurcated storytelling, like if I do put those pieces together and get rid of the Aldrich-y middle, then this does become what you're saying. Like it becomes a place where I would want some answers.
Yeah.
You know, and it just, I don't feel like I got them.
How much cooler would it be if, like you finish this area and then like, as opposed to Aldrich being like just a Lord of Cinder that you have to kill to get here, like he's the ultimate, like he's the end boss of the game, basically. Like that would be like that whole concept of a boss and of who Aldrich is and how he relates to Pontiff Sullivan is so much more of an interesting idea for the end boss of this game than I think the one that we got.
I am dreading and savoring the episode where we actually talk about Soul of Cinder, because like I have strong feelings on that boss in every sense of the word. Like, I mean, because we know about Aldrich and we've had the sense of dread and we've, you know, felt this thing, and we haven't had that for Lothric, which ends up being kind of strangely appropriate to the kind of pathetic character that he ends up being, mm-hmm. In a weird way. But what it ends up doing is like, the lead up to him, the first two levels, the levels that lead up to him that just kind of pose these questions without really elucidating very much. That's it. Like, it's not like there isn't a like ultra Lothric after this. The answer is it. It's then we go to the Soul of Cinder, which is tying back into this third like greater cosmology about the fire and stuff that is related, but it doesn't actually, like, there's no extra layer. It feels like there would be more game after this that would actually expand on that, which is why people keep talking about the DLCs, I think, because it definitely feels like some of the stuff needs following up. Like there's a missing level, you know, like it ends very suddenly, like this game, like after we get through this place, we've done all four Lords of Cinders, and then it just, you know, you go to a crazy wasteland and kill the boss from BioShock,
kill a multi-day.
Yeah, exactly. And then that's the end. So it kind of drives me bonkers. Like getting this angel stuff introduced. I mean, again, there were kind of hints at it earlier, but having it kind of introduced and without being actually explained adequately.
Yeah.
Actually feels like a weird slap in the face to me.
Yeah.
And this.
The only thing I can think to call this, like the ultimate effect, is, you know, just to bring up a reference here, which is the battle scenes from Anchorman.
You
know, because we have all of these, we have all of these different kind of like factions and elements that we've found. You know, we've got people from Irithyll showing up. We have, you know, what apparently is the ultimate form of the pilgrims showing up. You know, we have these angels and stuff as well. And like, it just kind of feels like, oh, and now the Spanish news broadcasters are coming in.
Yeah.
Now we have like, it feels like there's
statues of the serpents.
Yeah.
Like now they're coming in,
It's like, well, we might as well. And then it eventually just, it already was a farce. Like we're going to have a big old fight in the park/castle. And now, you know, let's just add as much as we can. And it just muddies the water in a way that I think leaves it dissatisfying, even though it very much kind of does feel like it is meant to kind of portray this gigantic battle that it never really comes across, because we only ever see it smoldering in the aftermath, you know?
Yeah. And part of it is not understanding so many of the factions. Like, it's not like, oh, here's the Spanish news team. It's like, here's just another bunch of people that we know, like we can look at their uniforms and tell one thing about them, and we can look at their swords and tell one other thing, but that's about what we got.
Yeah.
You know, like it's about not understanding any of the factions. So when you have a fight and you don't, like, wars are not just like battles. Like, wars have context behind them where you understand the motivations of each side. Like, mm-hmm. And that's what's missing here.
Yeah.
Is the sense of like context behind any of the action that we're seeing.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's part of this grander confused Dark Souls 3 narrative thing too. Like the thing about the butterflies, and I was going to talk about this later when we got to the boss, but mm-hmm. It works out just as well here, is that like the series. So we have going through here, we have like four different ways people are fucking turning into trees. Yeah. You know, like we have people, giants turning into trees in two. And mm-hmm. those exist in this game as well. We have people turning into trees with the kind of black vines growing out of them that we saw in Lothric. We have the relaxed rocking chair tree people. And then we have the pilgrim butterflies, which look like trees or also look like beds of chaos, because why not? through this. And like that, couple that with like giants, like don't mean one thing in this.
Yep.
People turning into dragons. Sometimes it's because they are... you know, the pus of man, which we'll mm-hmm. find later in this episode. Sometimes it is because it's Shanalot and they're trying to cure the curse. Sometimes people turn into dragons because it's the warrior's way. Mm-hmm. Like, it is just every single aspect that maybe is kind of cool on its own has four or five different answers to why. Like, if nobody could tell you in dark, it's kind of like, if, you know, a man with two watches has no idea what time it is. Mm-hmm. You know, a man with one watch knows. Like, nobody could tell you in this game, like, what happens to a hollow when they go on long enough. Because it depends. Sometimes they turn up like Horus and they go crazy. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's Dark Souls 1 style. Sometimes they're, if they're one of these pilgrims, though, and they're a hollow, they, you know, this thing bursts from their back, presumably, and they turn into one of these butterfly things.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's just every, like, so many aspects of it have that sense to it that, like, it just becomes a mess.
Yeah.
Like, and really frustrating.
And you know, and again, I, you know, we have no insight into the development of this. I would also be very curious to read design works on this if they ever did it. But that feels like the product of a bunch of different creative visions that mm-hmm. were built out and then never compared with each other. Again, it's the whole "who gave the dog the medicine" thing we talked about a couple of episodes ago. Like, a lot of people gave some really good and potent medicine to these dogs. Like, any of those ideas, in a vacuum, when examined to their fullest, feels okay, yeah, but next to each other the dog dies.
Yeah I've given this dog six kinds of chocolate.
Well, no, like, any chocolate would kill the dog.
I'm being cranky, but yeah, it yeah. is. I mean, that's a good way to put it. It is you know, it's just too many. It's Mr. Burns trying to shove all the diseases through the through the door, you know. Like, there's just too much to make it make sense, and
without the compelling case that all of these different ideas are what is keeping Dark Souls 3 alive.
No, yeah, they're not. It is not helping it, at least for me.
Yeah.
Or you know, even so, if they're significant at all. Like, I mean, what is, like, at the end of the day, like, what do tree people, like, sitting in chairs have to do with the other guys, have to do with the other guys, or what do any of them matter on, like, the ecosystem of this world as a whole? Like, obviously, these pilgrims turning into giant pilgrim butterflies and interacting with the boss and flying towards the dark sign in the sky means something. But the fact that there's, like, three different ways to turn into stuff in this game that don't seem to be related to each other or have any kind of effect, like, it just makes every single one of them ring. I'm not going to say ring hollow, but it just makes them all seem, like, kind of worthless.
Like, it's a hollow ring, Jeremy.
Well,
that's the thing when people, you know, as somebody who has spent a lot of time, you know, and who semi-professionally reads posts and theories about Souls games and stuff, and it's been a lot of time today, like, I, you know, put it out on Twitter, like, my dragon to slay on this was, like, pilgrim butterflies. Internet, give me all you got. Mm-hmm. You know, like, explain these things to me because I don't get it. And there's a commonality in every single, almost every single Dark Souls 3 theory that I've read, where the bulk of it is made up entirely of connections to things. Like, oh, this kind of has feathers, so that suggests Velka. Mm-hmm. But then that's the end of the sentence. There's no, like, and therefore, this is a motivation, this is what that means for the world.
Right.
Those parts never get answered, and those parts are always guesses. And that's happened for every single one of these mysteries I've looked up, like the Profane Flame, the Butterflies, the Pilgrims of Londor. It is all, this is connected to X, Y, and Z. Okay. You know, that's great. That's good work. Like, good detective work that you found those connections. But then there's no end of the sentence. There's no end of the equation for anything.
there's no comma space and then a continuation.
Yeah, they never get to why.
Yeah. It reminds, like, I was, not to be the person who quotes his own pithy tweets, but, like, there's an element of, like, Dark Souls 3 lore searching where I just imagine somebody with a big cork board full of index cards and names and all this twine, and everything is connected to each other. Oh, like, Logan is connected to four things, and Seath taught Logan, but he, you know, that's the that's connected to Farron, but Farron is also connected to Elysial, which has no connection to, you know, connection to Seath, etc. And then just they stand back and go, my god, it's a cycle. And then that's it. Like, you know, like, there's no, what else are you going to come to with any of this stuff? It drives me mad. And I think that there's, like, an assumption that, like, oh, we're just not trying hard enough. And that's not the case. Like, you're trying too hard.
Yeah.
You know, like, you're doing too much of the work for this. Not enough.
No.
You know, like, it is too much of your own self in this. And headcanon is fun. Like, I get that. No. But it is just, it is headcanon, you know, for so much of this stuff.
Yeah.
You got to give it up to, like, people like Trey on Twitter who are, like, I mean, that dude has worked his ass off trying to figure out, like, the grand unifying mushroom theory of Dark Souls 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah, loves mushrooms. Just... Yeah. It's funny, though, because... Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say, like, it's good that Dark Souls gives you, like, that fertile ground to work with, but, like, the problem with Dark Souls 3 versus something like Dark Souls 1 is it doesn't give you like the end product. Like Cole just said, like it doesn't give you the why. It never finishes the statement. Like the different ways to say that. Like it's fun to go through and like think about this stuff, but I just wish there was just a tad bit more fleshed out. Like
yeah.
I know Dark Souls doesn't do that, but like you got to give me something. Like Seath was a complete story by the end of Dark Souls.
Dark 1. Souls does it.
Solaire was pretty much a complete story with one hanging question. Like that they finish those stories within the game. Yeah. Like when Vadi started doing Prepare to Cry, like he wasn't pulling shit out of his ass. Like he was actually using stuff in the game to make those claims.
Yeah.
I don't feel like you can really do that here without going into the land of guesswork or the land of assumption. And that's kind of a bummer when I'm used to looking at these games and having that big, huge well of story to dig through.
Yeah. A mystery without an answer is just a really dumb question.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah. It's a, mm-hmm. it's a riddle designed to trick you out of the One Ring or something. The, when you say that Dark Souls doesn't do that, that's the secret is Dark Souls does,
yeah.
You know, like it's the difference between somebody, you know, writing something and having an answer in mind and not, and I'm not saying they don't have an answer in mind, but that's what it, there's a feeling that is very similar to that where, I don't, you know, it doesn't, the clues we're given don't suggest mm-hmm. that it's built up around an answer. Like
yeah.
Trey's thing, which like he's put a lot of work into it and it is very interesting. Like there's a lot of kind of stuff there. And, you know, but if people are turning into mushrooms, like that's just another thing that people are turning into with, yeah, you know,
that's the fifth thing.
It's, yeah, it's another thing that just adds onto it. Like one of the things I was thinking about during this discussion is that the DLC is going to add a lot of things and kind of try to square the circle. It's an impossible thing. But what if a DLC could take things away? You know, like it's almost like it needs to have some stuff chopped from it and it yeah. would work more than like I can imagine things being cut from it. Making it work more than I can imagine things being added to it and making it work. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. like it is just, I think, Coley, I think you're right on where it feels like a lot of different kind of creative visions in a six car yeah. pileup.
And what's
Miyazaki touched it too much. That's what happened.
Well, like not even
all
that.
10 fingers.
So I was about to point, you know, to point a crooked finger at Miyazaki and say, like, okay, it is not difficult to solve backward from a cool idea to fitting this into the world.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like, okay. I, you know, just in my sketchbook, I have this idea that, you know, if something goes, you know, is left unchecked, their circulatory system bursts out of them and they turn into these gigantic butterflies, kind of like the crystal butterfly or the moonlight ones. Yeah. But this time touched by chaos. Okay. Well, let's think of like, let's definitely do that because that's rad as fuck. But let's actually make a decision about the way this impacts stuff and what it shows me or what it feels like anyway. And I just, God, I'm telling tales out of school on this. I don't know if I'm using that right. I feel like I'm punching above my, mm-hmm. above my weight here at the very least. But what it feels like is nobody wanted to make a definitive statement because they're operating under the weight and burden of so much previous canon almost mm-hmm. because if they say like, oh, you know, okay, if they are from Londor and they also look like the you know the chaos beasts and we know they're abyss touched as well. Well, they picked up Aldia's research or something like that. Like it's that combination between the you know the darkness, you know, beyond the flame and chaos itself, and like this is just something that kind of like set in. Well, all of a sudden that has so many hooks into so many other things.
Yeah, everything is a little bit too interwoven now mm-hmm. that it is this complicated. Like, so if they definitely recall the Bed of Chaos, like that is 100% a true thing. But they, one of the things is that they definitively answered what happened to Chaos in this.
Yep. Yeah. You know, which was basically nothing.
Well, that it burned out. Like all the demons are dead. The first flame died. Like there's contradictory things, and this happened in the last episode too, where it's not just about kind of bending over backward to make space for all of this lore that they've created and all of these possibilities. In doing that, they've also lit out a lot of things that are explicitly contradictory mm-hmm. too. So it makes this job of doing this like immensely frustrating.
Yeah.
And there's little elements of like, I would love to, when we didn't talk to Askbody about this when we had him on, because like, you know, he wouldn't be able to tell us, you know, but I wonder if other people who do this, who kind of look at this lore are also getting that feeling from this,
yeah.
you know, and they're just, it still remains very popular as a thing for consumers. Like people still really, you know, I subscribe to 20 different Dark Souls lore people on YouTube, and these kind of like big guesswork kind of things, you know, they're still very popular.
Mm-hmm.
People still really like them. So there is this pressure to keep doing it regardless. But I wonder if on their end, if they are getting irked, you know, or not.
Yeah.
Maybe not. I'm not totally sure, but it definitely feels to me like I'm feeling it. Like I am getting irked. I don't know how alone I am in that.
I don't know. I don't know if like irked would be the right word, but like tired. Like, yep. I'm just so done. Like, I was, Bloodborne was so refreshing because it was all new stuff and it didn't relate at all. We didn't have to worry about this looks like chaos, so it could be tied to this thing over here. Like it was just all new. And I think that's, I feel like for me, I'm just like, ugh, more. I even feel like that way about the DLC, which is the first time I'm super excited to play the DLC, but at the same time, I'm like, ugh, my Twitter feed is just going to be wrecked for like 2 weeks.
There's a guy who I follow who, just to show like there's a demand for this and that people are 100% filling in gaps. I won't name names, but there's a guy who I follow on YouTube who does lore videos, who did a 10-minute lore video on the Swordmaster. The summon that you can make that has clothing that got ripped to shreds. That's a joke.
Right. Yeah.
10 minutes. 10 minutes. Like, it is there where people are bringing so much of their own soul spackle to this,
mm-hmm.
to fill this stuff up and make kind of content about it. And it is really, really perplexing to me in a frustrating way. I don't know. It is tiring, Jeremy. Like it is tiring. I'm really looking forward to playing the DLC. I'm really looking forward to information about the second DLC too, which like just needs to be the profaned pilgrims of Angelic Londor, you know, like throw it all together and just, you know,
yeah.
But it won't be. It's going to be, you know, you ride Sif through the abyss to fight Artorias's ghost and
oh man, I can get a mount. Are you saying I can get my first mount
for 99 cents?
Only if you're level 45.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. So I just want a release date for the thing.
Yeah, I would like that too. That would help us plan.
Yeah, make it easy to do my job from.
Yeah. Anyway,
why don't they consider the podcasters?
Where's my parade?
Oh, it's because our listenership is an order of magnitude less than YouTube people. So that's why they get access to the DLC early and all that jazz. It's a dying art form, folks. moving on to the level two, like that rant was going to come somewhere in this episode. Like, there it is. And hopefully you guys don't feel like it's too much. So you kind of go up this long, it feels silly to go back into, you go up this long set of stairway with those ambushes we're talking about. Lots of Eloid Talisons and stuff. These are all really great.
Yeah.
I really like these, and you have to kind of be on your toes in a way that is really appealing. It doesn't feel like throwing a meat wall against you. Up to the next bonfire here, the Dragon Barracks.
Yes. This is kind of on a huge overgrown battlement. This is a good bonfire. We're going to need it, especially because of the set piece that's coming up. We're kind of surrounded by these empty suits of armor, kind of like kneeled around. And I didn't know what those were in Highwall. I don't know what they are now, why they appear to be humans, but they're empty.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. They got raptured away or something. It feels like,
yeah.
I don't know why either. I just wish they would break open. Like, I wish if I hit them, they like shattered. I don't think they do though.
Yeah, it'd be fun to roll through them.
Exactly.
It'd be the right time to roll through me. you head up on the left. You actually find another Lothric knight, another one of these tough boys guarding a lance. If you want to get that, the great lance.
Yeah.
Which is lance weapons are fun.
Yep, I like lances a lot.
I wish they had learned from Scholar and put a lance weapon like way earlier in the game though. Like when Scholar came out and they put that great lance, like when you can get it almost immediately, like that's a build opportunity. Like now I just feel like, oh, I have to kill the dancer, then like run through all these stabulons, and then I can get the great lance.
Yeah.
Yeah. Same thing with the claws. Like you had to get the Wolverine claws, you have to kill the dancer.
Yeah.
And we talked about that last episode. But having at least one representation of every weapon class early on would be really good. And to be fair, like that's hardly a Dark Soul. Like Scholar did it really well, but Bloodborne also has that problem.
Yeah.
You know, where you don't get a weapon variety for a long time. Like having early representations of most weapon classes would be really great.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you head up this little area, this a little bit of respite to see a really, you know, a huge kind of striking set piece, which is two gigantic Lothric drakes. Perched on either side of a bridge.
Oh man. So yeah, you got this tradition, you got dragons over bridges. Yeah, well guess what, we got two of them now. Two, see it?
Yep.
Yeah, they're gonna breathe fire on them.
And guess they're what bigger, too.
Yeah. So these guys, they kind of will flood the entire kind of antechamber here between these two barrack towers and the bridge itself if you can approach. However, I don't know if it's because of the spec that I had or anything else. They're more easily surmountable than any of the previous ones that I've seen so far. Like, I can make a straight up run past these guys with some very kind of tactical rolling.
Yeah, that does. They don't do the damage is not instant death,
right?
Like it often is with fire, dragon fire in these games, or not like effectively instant death.
Yeah.
And this, I think the game is directing you away from these guys.
Yes.
But so I never tried it. I never did that. And even when I cheese these guys with arrows, eventually I did it from elsewhere.
Yeah.
I didn't do it here.
Mm-hmm. I was going to try it this time because I was curious, but then when I got here, realized that I'd already killed them. So I just had to pretend they were there.
You were just running, like holding up on the analog stick going.
Yeah, just making fire noises with my mouth. Yeah.
Crackle, crackle, crackle. cellophane.
And then you kill them or something did, which we'll talk about. Like, maybe you guys can answer that for me. What actually triggers these guys dying? So they want you to fall off the bridge to your left, I hear, and usually there'll be some like helpful soapstone messages.
Yeah
there.
This isn't death. You just kind of fall into a moat. There's like the wrong way from this is to go to the right as you're looking at the castle and get the sniper crossbow, which gives you this cool little shoulder tackle, which is nice. But the actual moat itself, and then off to the left, is where you can find these pus of men.
Well, you can also go onto the lip of the moat. Like, if you fall off the bridge right away, you end up on the top floor, which is what I always did. I didn't go down into the moat right away because I'm not going to fight pus of men like in a fair fight,
especially
ever.
In that red eye pus of men, because this dude is an asshole. Like, the guy, if you fall over and hit the lip of the moat and then go left, he'll aggro even though he's down, like he can't get you, and his like crazy pus of man shit explodes, and then he can just clip through shit. Like he can just straight up clip through and attack you, like if you're trying to draw the next enemy out, kind of, so you can get away from the crossbow guy and the guy throwing Lloyd's talismans, like, and he can still hit you from down there. Like, it's really annoying.
This guy,
the placement on this guy really irritated me.
Yeah. And also, like, they as of the Consume King's Garden, they've gotten rid of any pretense that you have to kill these guys before they will sprout.
Well, yeah,
like, just being near this guy will cause him to just to explode into a shit wrecks.
Pus of Man definitely get the 2016 Winter Lantern Award for like worst soul's enemy. I hate these things.
And again, I love the idea so much.
I love the idea of them bursting out. I don't think they look. I mean, we talked about this.
Yeah.
They look like Resident Evil in a bad way. And they look like
Resident Evil
5-y.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's a perfect way to put it. Yeah. Like, they don't look Resident Evil good, like Resident Evil 2. They're not tyrants. They look like, Resident Evil 5. And the, but they're just so unfun for me to fight and so hard to read. They fuck with my camera. Like, these things are abject failures. Other than the idea of, like, I like the idea of you having to, this thing kind of bursting in you and this thing kind of to avoid, this abyss thing. But so this is going to be interesting, the notes here, because it sounds like me and Jeremy both go down to the lip of the moat and you go down into the moat.
Well, I mean, they're barely different. So if you go into the moat itself, you just have to circle back around. If you go into the lip, you can actually go up and around to the side of the building.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then run perpendicular across the from the dragons,
yes,
which is a shorter run and you can make it without getting hit by fire at all.
And the left barrack, you can go down and fight a boreal outrider, which I have no idea why it's there, aside just to give you the Irithyll rapier. Like, I understand, like, okay, they're under attack, we've seen them at the gates. I don't know if he's in beast jail or what, but
I mean, he can climb up those stairs. He's just chilling until you go down there and then, like, get his attention. It's like, oh, no, buddy, the door's open. You can just leave at any time. He's like a really dumb dog. Like, no, you can just walk through the door. It's open.
He won't walk over the carpet line. Yeah.
Yeah. Poor pupper.
This guy, by the way, because this dude sucks.
This guy sucks too. Yeah, I don't like fighting these things. There's another one in the archives, too, and, like, I don't like fighting these things. They do a thing that I dislike, that is a Dark Souls 3 innovation, where they start breathing fire, and if you hit them, they stun out of it and then immediately counterattack, rather than you being rewarded for waiting them for them to breathe fire and being able to wail on them for a minute. And that's something Vort did, too. But, like, I feel like if I see their fire breath start to happen and then I circle around them, like, that's my time to get in some damage,
Yeah.
They shouldn't immediately be able to counterattack that. Like, that kind of drives me a little bit crazy. But you can go down there. You get that Irithyll rapier. Also, the encounters to the left are pretty tricky. There's like several of those axe knights. It's kind of like a mini, like a condensed version of the actual run up here.
Yeah,
up those stairs. If you go to the right, you enter this gigantic library.
Yeah, I love this room. The atmosphere here is really cool. It's super, super dark. And most of the enemies here are going to be throwing firebombs at you. So you're just going to get these brief little flashes as they throw from above and hope that they don't ignite the barrels at the bottom. But these brief flashes where it lights up the room and shows like this area is strewn with non-aggressive hollows who are just kind of like posted up on the ground holding their heads.
Well, they there's a guy up at the top. There's a bell ringer outside.
Oh,
who triggers to come inside. And if he comes in, he rings the bell and makes them all aggro.
Yeah.
I had no idea. That is good to know.
I like this whole room. Like, I like the way that it's set up. Like, it's kind of vertical. You got people. I like that they do the very Dark Souls thing is like they lead you over to the side to pick up an item. And then you pick it up and it's dark firebombs. And you pick it up right about the time it's about to hit you with the firebomb and it explodes.
Yeah.
Like, that's always really satisfying to me. Like, you got me. You got me.
that is real good.
It's like fuck you, no fuck me. Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's get into you know, at the other end of this, if you climb up the ladder there, we get to see where the dragon's foot is, which has a Pus of Man kind of stuff in there coming out of it in a way that looks like a clipping issue more than you know, something that is between things. And let's camp out, I guess, for a minute on what the fuck is going on with these dragons.
What is going on with the pus of dragons? I don't get it.
The notes,
Cole, What's the deal? Yeah.
Killing a pus of dragon will make both dragons inert. That was not true in my experience.
This is Scratty Rouse slipshod broken. I have no idea. It happened for me. It's happened for me both times, but I could totally see it. Like, there's no link of causality. I think that like maybe that was combined with some other thing that I don't remember doing. I didn't kill the white dragon. I just killed this one by attacking his pus of man, and then they were just both inert.
They fall asleep without you attacking as well. So it's not about, like, I know if you attack them, that does make them inert. Mm-hmm. I've come across this guy and had both dragons go to sleep at some point before I kill either of them. I don't know what triggers the dragons going to sleep.
The gate behind the dragons to lead into that like grand room we're going to get to here in just a bit. Like, I feel like that kind of just like makes them non-hostile for some reason, but I really have no idea because in my last runs, I always just like kill the dragon right here because they're kind of annoying.
So. Right.
They literally go to sleep. They don't just get non-hostile. Like the dragons, they have like corpses that fall over dead, but they will disappear like illusions. Yeah. That you can clip through. Like, what is, it's such a weird intersection of like, stuff that I am torn to try to figure out what it is because it's Dark Souls and just video gaminess. Like being able to like clip through the actual thing like it's an illusion is very weird because it's introducing an element to these. So like, this is another way people are turning into fucking dragons in this game, or some kind of illusory magic is like, is this Lothric, you know, doing dragon, you know, magic to make these pus of men look like dragons to keep you out? You know, is it, you know, because a lot of the kind of, you know, there's a pretty good chance that Lothric's defenses and stuff are meant to stop the scourge of the Pus of Man, you know, so like you wouldn't think that he would have two of them as his lackeys, you know. So I have no idea what's going on with this. I kind of hate it. Like it if they were just dragons that you just fought, like it wouldn't be a good fight, you know, like from dragon fights are very rarely good. But this just kind of like, oh, there's a weird Pus of Man stuff clipping through there. Oh, I throw seven firebombs at it and then the dragon disappears. What? And then you go over to the other one, which is sleeping, and you can literally walk through it until you run into that other Pus of Man. Like,
yeah,
I hate it. Like it is just so like sloppy and confusing. And again, I don't need anything else turning into dragons for yet a fourth reason, you know, like I don't know. It's like, what's the word I'm looking for? It's like symbiotically or not symbiote. What is the word I'm looking for? Like semiotically, it's semiotically, really confused.
Yeah.
Like a symbol, a single image or kind of idea does not mean one thing in this.
Refresh my memory when it comes to the Pus of Men, like just the normal enemies that you encounter, like we encountered earlier. And then also in the High Wall of Lothric, like there's no lore behind where those dudes came from, right? Like it just happens. Like there's some sort of spreading, whatever.
It's like
they don't really get into.
I read it because they have the eyes, and then also because of Yudix Gunder, just the kind of the creeping condition around Hollowing, and then also the pilgrims, which have those things on their back to stop, you know, something,
the seedbed,
yeah, the seedbed from taking hold. I can't square away the seedbed turning into this and the pilgrim butterflies. Yeah.
Yes.
I think
it's posit the theory that OCK has been messing around, because there's a bunch of pus of men like in his little garden area. So like maybe he was like trying to do some dragon shit like Aldia was doing back in Dark Souls too. But Grundle messes that all up, and like all of this other stuff messes it up. You can't tie any of this stuff together.
Everything connects to everything. Like again, you just step back and go, cycles. Yeah, like it is, you know, because if these guys actually are related to dragons, it would make sense for them to be in the Consumed King's garden. It would also make sense for them to be there, not only because of the relationship to Osiris, but also because of the connection to Archdragon Peak. Mm-hmm. Never mind the fact that those dragons are entirely different, have like a different philosophy behind them, and are like this microcosm of an entirely different thing.
Yeah.
You know, but we also have that seedbed thing, you know, so does that mean that the pilgrims don't turn into pilgrim butterflies? Because another name for them in the guide is undead dragon.
Mm-hmm.
And that's even leaving apart the fact that they look exactly like beds of fucking chaos. So like, this is the part where I start hating it. Like it is in my soul, like, fuck, man, like. Like not everything needs to connect to every other thing. Like I'm waiting for there to be like an item description in the DLC that's like, you know, the bed of chaos, the people who worship the bed of chaos, the pilgrims who worship the bed of chaos, turned their backs on the dragons and started worshiping Logan's deceitful ways. Like, just why not just connect it to literally everything else in the game? Why don't you?
I feel like somebody could come along and do a really good Alex Jones parody Dark Souls 3 lore video and just like scream at the microphone and be like, it's all connected. It's connected.
Some bad money.
I won't believe you, devil. You devil, Logan.
They're putting pus of men in the water supply to make all the hollows turn gay.
Thrust therefore butthole.
That's the ending of every episode.
but what's infuriating is if you kind of cross your eyes, it like makes sense just for the moment where you're there, which is okay, these are big dragons, they've got something that is kind of corrupting them, and that makes them violent and cranky, and why don't they might as well team up or whatever. Like but even beyond that bear of scrutiny, or within that bear of scrutiny, it starts to fall down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Ugh. Yeah, it is something where it plays into a larger Dark Souls 3 thing, which I've said a bunch of times on the season, or at least on Twitter, where like it's a game that makes less sense and is less satisfying the more you think about it.
Yeah.
Like that first glance, like really does kind of make sense. My first time through this, like I had a lot of fond memories, even of this, like I was like, oh shit, like what could it possibly mean that the pus of man is turning into dragons? Like we, you know, and I was trying to square it with everything I knew about turning into dragons from the series, you know? And then before I realized that that's incompatible, like every one of the lines, everything I have filed under people turning into dragons in my like Dark Souls Rolodex is incompatible with every other one. You know, like it's just weird for it just to, it could do any of the things, you know, they're all turning into dragons.
Yeah.
It just makes me want like for want of different things. Like what if in, you know, this ancient warrior, you know, we've already established turning into dragons, is something like a monk kind of a monistic, like monk order kind of fighting thing, you know, and that's in Dark Souls 1 and that's fine.
Yep.
That's well and good. Then just make these, instead of making them turn into dragons, use another mythological creature or something. You know, like these could have been chimera or just like serpent. Well, they could have been hydras.
Well, they didn't turn into dragons. They turned into drakes or wyverns or whatever.
Oh, God. Shoot me in the fucking
face.
Look,
this is not Monster in My Podcast, okay? We don't need to get into the...
like shove a crossbow bolt into my ear. Anywho, I hate this thing, and I hate that there's no good way to actually fight it.
Yeah.
You have to, you more or less have to cheese it with firebombs, because if you get up close to it, it like spits at you and it whips around in a super unpredictable hitbox way that makes it like not a good fight.
And also it lays on curse in a way that other pus of men kind of things don't.
So anyway, so that's how you get rid of the dragons. You can make the run to the middle here if you want to easy.
So you can open up the front door to this gigantic great hall, which really just ends up being kind of this big combat arena. kind of thing. A couple of red-eyed slash elons. I think it's kind of cool how different, like, they're in different states of dress as they go along. Like, the ones who have their visors up, they feel a little bit more aggressive. Like, whether or not they have a cape is something that I read on the wiki as well. I think that that's a, that's a nice subtle way to differentiate their different behaviors.
Yeah. Yeah. However, I just run past them.
Yep.
Because this encounter is too tough for me. So I like that in theory.
Yep.
But
yeah. So you get up to this balcony behind the castle itself, and we have the fog door in front of us right away. We can go there. We can see the boss of this area, but we need to do a couple things in order to kind of complete this. First of which is get that elevator for the useless shortcut. Second of which is to go over to this chapel. Guys,
I didn't mean to, now that I thought about it, I apologize for shortcut shaming you, Cole. So I use whichever way you want. I think it is probably superfluous, but that's not a hill I want to die on. Yep. So
okay.
I apologize.
No, I stopped and moved on as I do.
Okay.
But guys, what's up with this with this chapel? Because the picture that this is painting is they're kind of worshiping everybody, but specifically they have spurned the way of white in order to embrace Kaitha, and also really get in there. Like, this is not Kareem, you know. why is Kaitha worship here so kind of like plentiful?
I don't get the Kaitha stuff at all. Like, the Red Tearstone ring talks about her, and I'm like, what? Like, of all of the weird Dark Souls 2 stuff to pull, like, this is where you're going with that? Like, that's so strange.
Yeah,
I don't know. I got nothing.
Yeah,
I have no idea where worship of Kaitha came from. I don't think it's the angels, and I don't think it's the faith that they had before the angels came around either, because the faith they had before the angels came around would have had to have been explicitly fire focused, like linking the fire focus with that. And that's not what we know about Kaith. Kaitha, like, that is not related.
Yeah.
So I have nothing. I have nothing, man. It's just, it's all going in a big pot. It's all, Dark Souls 3 stone soup.
And also, Kaitha, Kareem rather. Kareem, that's the place that worships Fina, right? Why all of a sudden is Kareem linked to Kaitha or Kaitha?
I don't know. I'm fine with that, like a polytheistic. That's not the hill I would die on in here. But like it is confused. Like it's sloppy. I would never deny that that's not sloppy.
Yeah.
Is it the Kaitha charm that has like the literal Dark Souls 2 marketing slang in the description where it's like in something about those who have gone beyond death? Because I saw that on my most recent playthrough, and it had to be either here or during a loading screen. And I guess I hadn't picked up on that they used exactly like the marketing slogan for Dark Souls 2 and an item description about Dark Souls 2. But it feels like the most hammy thing in the world. Like, it's just, it just irritates me to see like those who have gone beyond death. Like, what? What are you talking about?
Yeah.
I don't think prepare to die is in anywhere in Dark Souls 1. You know what I'm saying? Like,
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm marketing looking, sucks. Kill all marketing.
I'm looking at the Kaitha's chime, and I do not see that particular phrase snippet. So
might be on the Shield of Wand or something like that. Like it's in a Dark Souls 2 item. I know what you're talking about. There's also that one item that talks about how like it says that it ends with try Cool Ranch Doritos today, and that one's real fucking weird. For those who have flavor blasted their taste buds and decided to worship Blanca de Bloop. I don't know why what the Kaitha stuff is doing here. And it gets even like, so this is more confused because you kind of make your way back through this you walk, go over this rooftop to go back into this little shrine-lit thing. You cross over the roof, drop down into like the dark chamber there. There's another red-eyed slash Elon guarding a sunlight altar.
Mm-hmm.
So this has been a part of like a lot of personally frustrating lore video stuff about where Solaire ultimately ended up as well. So like, if he's not soup and he's not a worm, people have said that he is somehow like an assistant to Ornstein, who was like a public figure in Lothric, who was like something like that. And
Ornstein died. We killed him.
Well, I mean, a couple times, but his armor also shows up later too. So like, again, and it just plays into that greater, like the Ornstein, Nameless King, Solaire, trifecta of unsatisfying lore answers in Dark Souls 3. So I don't really feel good about this being here. I also don't feel good about it, how his retcon the Sunlight Street Sword into being magic.
Yeah, because the entire thing about his set is that it's mundane. Come on.
Yeah. It, again, just the ongoing character assassination in Dark Souls 3 of like, so you like Solaire, do you? Well, fuck you. Well, soup. He's a worm. He was a piece of shit.
Dumbo, I'm going to need you to keep a hold of this feather. It turns out the magic wasn't in you in all along.
Yeah, the magic was it was just an experiment, honestly. We thought maybe you could do it without the feather, but it turns out you're greasy stain on the sidewalk now, so I had to wipe this elephant lard off my boots. And
but hey, new piano.
Yeah. Exactly. This check is even made of ivory. But man, does this suck?
Yeah.
And it's not, again, so the people who get mad that I get frustrated by this stuff and then are mad that I like Dark Souls 2, I thought the Sunlight Altar placement in Dark Souls 2 was frustrating too.
Yeah, it was very
much. And I think we're on the record as saying that's arbitrary and dumb.
We talked about its reappearance being something that was very much kind of like fan service-y. And even here, they take a step back because at least there it's like, what, Heirs of Sunlight? Like Heirs of Sun, like, you know, like there's an idea the time has passed, and this is, you know, not just the warriors, but like this is something that has been passed down kind of in a world where sun worship never really kind of, it's not a thing really in Dream Lake. Here it's just like, oh yeah, Warriors of the Sun, we're back, guys, get this gesture. It's obligatory, kill me.
Pretty frustrating.
So I think all the people who are angry at us for liking Dark Souls 2 are gone.
There's been a churn. So now we're just welcoming people who are angry at us for being mad at this game. So it is such a funny thing that, like,
hating people that just like Mass Effect 3. So they just moved on to a different podcast.
Can we just move to a game that is a more we start out, we describe what's in the Dark Souls area, and then let's do a tight 30 minutes on BioShock Infinite sucking, and then move on. It is something that's funny too, because when people, you know, it kind of went away because I think, you know, people do cycle out who don't like the show, which is good for them.
Yeah.
But earlier on,
don't listen to things that make you mad. Come on.
it's very easy. When people were getting furious at us and saying that it was somehow like a marketing thing that we were complaining about this, it's so funny because it's like, it does our listenership no favors. Like, it's not like people are into this stuff, about us being cranky about it.
I can show you the fall off. As a percentage, it's been much greater this season than in previous seasons.
So it is, I can't not react honestly to the work. It is the only thing that we're going to do, and that does not necessarily that's not necessarily where the listeners are. As evidenced by the 10-minute video on the Swordmaster. The listeners just want to kind of have people throw and get darts. Like, they want guesses. You know, we're not listeners, but like the fandom, not entirely. Again, like, there are people who are probably closer in line with where I'm coming at this from, but that is kind of by and large, I think, where the numbers are.
Yep.
So anywho, this little area, outside of that, there's this weird little area you can go to the right, that little kind of like miniature churchlet that actually the elevator that goes down to the other church where we started, that little cathedral.
Oh yeah, that's what I meant. That's the shortcut.
Yeah.
That's where you found all the Kate this stuff and everything.
Mostly though, there's just the fog gate, and it's explicitly a fog gate here for the boss of this area, which is the Dragon Slayer armor.
I love the approach to this, because as you are walking up to the gate, you can actually see the gigantic wings of one of these creatures sticking out over the top. And I thought, oh, fuck yeah, like Moonlight Butterfly Reprise, let's go.
Yeah.
And it's kind of true. But when you walk in and you see this this butterfly just kind of like take off, and then all of a sudden a dude comes at you, it is very confusing, and it is a very effective fake out, I found.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'll buy that.
Because he's like, coming at you just like Ornstein did in Dark Souls 1. Like, he just like rushes to attack you first thing.
Yes.
Which is pretty cool.
Let me look between your legs, because I'm pretty sure those balls are out.
Yeah. He's got the triple play. It is something where, too,
Sorry.
You got me. I'm not used to you doing Akewood.
It's one of those things too where, so his name is Dragon Slayer. I've seen a lot of people online who are just like, oh, this is Ornstein's armor, or it's definitely related. I think it is related, but his moveset like couldn't be less like Ornstein's after that initial charge.
Yeah.
Like he doesn't do Ornstein moves.
Right.
He fights with a big heavy weapon, and he does shield bashes and stuff. Like he's a big tank guy. And Ornstein is not Smo. He's the lithe, spear fighter. So like
he's the guy who does like the dragoon jump attacks.
Yeah. Yeah. When people have kind of compared this and been like, oh, it's like clearly Ornstein's armor. Like we fought Ornstein before. Like I don't think this fight has very much in common with Ornstein at all.
Yeah.
At least for my, my take. I mean, even visually, people are like, oh, it's clearly Ornstein's armor. It's like,
looking at a vague silhouette. Like it's got this layered armor. He also has like this tassel coming out of the top of him, like Ornstein has. But like beyond that, like this is fucking Darkwraith armor. Is what it looks like with the ribbing and stuff.
Yeah, it's definitely a mix of things, because like to me, Ornstein's armor, the definitive thing is the lion mask.
Mm-hmm.
Like that is the defining aspect of that armor, which is missing here. And then the other defining aspect is a spear. And both those things are not, none of those things are on offer. So this feels like a different thing to me. Looking up just kind of the background of this thing, the consensus is kind of like that this is a third. There's in the lore descriptions of Ornstein serving the Nameless King, there's a reference to another, like a Ornstein and a Dragon Slayer or something like that. So this is kind of an unnamed guy we haven't seen before, or his armor. Or this is the Nameless King's armor, which is another thing, and people are like, oh, the fight recalls the Nameless King fight. And I don't really see that either. I think the Nameless King fight's closer to Ornstein.
Yeah, I don't get that.
Yeah. This feels like a new moveset to me. It doesn't feel like it's reminiscent of anything.
Yeah,
I kind of feel like if you had run into the Dragon Slayer Sage back in the Faerun Woods, people would be like, well, that looks like Ornstein too. Like, I think it's really just the Dragon Slayer part of this boss name that fucks everybody up, right? Yeah. Like, it's literally just that, because dissimilar weapons, dissimilar armor, like, it vaguely recalls Ornstein, like Cole said, with the silhouette, but, I mean, it's kind of a stretch.
Yeah.
It's a real kind of feint, and the thing too, I mean, that's not people's fault. They name it the same thing. Like Dragon Slayer Ornstein, Dragon Slayer armor. Like the name absolutely is there.
Yeah.
But it
and there's precedent for this guy coming back.
Yeah.
Like
that's true.
It could be pretty cool over the course of however much time. Like, okay, we fight him at the height of his power, we fight him abyss touched and, kind of out of it. And then we like literally he is just gone. He is a suit of armor that is nothing but like molten slag that is being controlled remotely.
Yeah.
Like just this all, talk about character assassination on Solaire, fucking Ornstein, like if this was the conclusion of his arc, like that's profane.
Yeah. That would be a bad, he'd fallen quite a bit.
Yeah.
So I don't feel like it is any of those characters. I feel like it's an unnamed kind of third character. What you said about it being controlled is the interesting part of this, is that we won't find out until after the fight, and we will talk about the fight here, but, is that we're actually fighting, the butterfly. The butterfly is controlling the armor remotely. That's badass.
Yeah, nobody suspects
I like
the
that
butterfly.
Quite a bit.
Super cool. Yeah.
Nobody suspects the butterfly. It's true. I love that, though. That is super, super cool. And it actually plays into the second half of the fight. But I can get way into an otherworldly presence controlling a suit of armor to fight me.
Yeah.
That will do it for me.
I'm even down for the fight itself. Like, I love this as like a complete just bare knuckle smash mouth kind of thing, not like the band smash mouth, but like the Ditka defense thing. Like it's really intense, and you can summon help for this. Like if you've gotten Cirrus up to the point, you can bring her in. You can bring Igon in, as long as you didn't betray him and Arena. Like even just the NPCs, like this feels like a climactic fight, not just because of the scenery,
It's a good fight to bring people in, I thought, for this build, because like I was not doing enough damage to this guy.
Yeah.
I beat him with my strength build. I beat all the bosses solo at least once, and like it was fine. For this build, I was just not doing enough damage to this guy, and got frustrated and decided to bring in some helpers. For him. But I think it is a good fight. I'm a little bit less so. The actual fight, the first phase, at the very least, is a duel kind of thing. The kind of way that I feel like it kind of tricks you is that his shield is so much more dangerous than his axe.
Yep.
Yes.
He uses it as a weapon in a really interesting way, and that is the thing to watch out for.
Yeah. it's so big too, and like it's not just that he'll you know, do damage to you with it, but like that thing is just, you know, you have to keep track of where it's at, because otherwise you will not have any kind of opening.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a, you know, other than that, it's like a duel. He has like little AoEs. You know, he will kind of swing around. He has some lightning attacks that are AoEs. The kind of gimmick to this is partway through, he kind of switches move sets, and then the Pilgrim Butterfly starts shooting projectiles down at you.
Mm-hmm.
This I like a little bit less. I've mostly heard people like this as a thing. I think it's a little bit frustrating to keep an eye on both.
Yeah.
And I've definitely died to this guy. You know, I've been fighting him. I'm fine. You know, I have my shield up. I'm facing him. I get hit, you know, dead, kind of dead angled by the butterfly because there's no poise that breaks my thing. And then he hits me with something and kills me.
Hmm.
That's happened to me a couple times. And I think it's kind of a bummer to just kind of be sniped during a fight and have nothing to do about it.
Mm-hmm.
In my mind, like in the series, when they've had dealing with ranged and melee attackers at the same time, it feels like a test to be smart enough to take out the ranged attackers first.
Mm-hmm.
With your One Reborn and your Tower Knight and stuff. Here, mm-hmm. you can... I actually looked online. Like, you can attack the butterfly, but nothing will ever happen.
Yeah, you have to have the right kind of bow to even do it. And then, yeah, it doesn't do anything to his health, and there are just so many of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It won't take them out. So you always have to deal with them both. They don't fire so much that it's, like, impossible or anything, but it was frustrating to me that it was a consideration you just couldn't do anything about. Like, knowing about it and trying to be prepared just wasn't what they were testing.
Yeah.
You know,
again, Dark Souls finds your weakness. I'm not trying to MLG, like, this kind of just heightened the drama for me, because I saw this and I was like, oh, I just have to keep moving. It doesn't matter if I think I have a shot at him, if I just wait here, like, that is going to be, you know, just a bad scene. I never ended up getting, like, dead angle 1-2 punched by this, either in, you know, in any of the playthroughs that I've done.
Mm-hmm. I had more difficulty with him breaking the railing to this bridge and then knocking off of it than I did with the, because it seemed like the butterflies will do that cast move like once, and then they just kind of chill out for a little while, and then they do it. So, and most of my builds, I don't use a shield, so like just circling around and kind of waiting for it while also dodging him was fairly simple for me. But man, there's a couple of his moves that will just send you flying across the level, and it, like, invariably would knock me off the ledge. This dude was dead when I was doing my run for the podcast, but I dropped my summon tide down and like probably fought him 10 or 15 times yesterday.
Oh, God.
And I mean, that probably happened 6 of those times. And he also has like one move that you talked about this earlier with the Lothric Knights that could one-shot you. He has some weird like half-stomp charge move that no matter where it hit me, it would just instantly kill me. And I'm like, you know, level 100 and something with 40 vitality or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not a weak dude by any means. But man, those two moves that knocked me off the bridge and then the like half step charge thing like killed me more times than I care to admit.
Yeah, he also does this thing where he feints being out of stamina, and then if you go and approach, he will kind of like fire off this really quick AoE that has a substantial knockback. That might be what you're referring to, actually.
Yeah, it's not my favorite. Like, I think this boss fight is pretty decent. I would like it more without the butterflies. I wish it was just something where I just had to pay attention and learn the boss. You know, what I want is Champion Gundyr. You know, like that's and this would be, I understand it would be too similar to that. They have two bosses in a row, or could be, you know, could be in a row
weapons.
That are just kind of duels with, you know. The shield bashes are very similar to Champion Gundyr's kicks and stuff, but to my mind, Champion Gundyr is a much better boss fight than this. This is fine. It also, you can get knocked off the bridge, which we didn't, you know, it didn't happen to me that often, but once is too many times.
Yep.
You know, and it's
unless I can knock the boss off the bridge.
Exactly.
unless you can do that, that's what justifies knocking people off the bridge to me, is if I can do it to you back.
Yep.
Yeah.
Can we talk about the music for a little bit? Because for whatever reason, I don't know. Most of Dark Souls 3 music is just kind of nonsense to me. Like, it's just like big choirs and like overly done everything. But for some reason, this really reminded me of Abridus's theme, which I've probably listened to like 1,000 times because I died to her so much in Bloodborne the first time I encountered her. Did you guys get that at all? Or is that just me being weird? Like, it just kind of seemed like that.
This music was mostly wallpaper to me, but I'm going to, I'll do some kind of comparison as you say that. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't pick it out either. Like, I kind of stopped paying attention to Soul's music like partway through this. Right after Demon's Souls, essentially. I mean, that's not quite true, but it is like I've gone back. Every game that's come out, including like Bloodborne, has had successively fewer songs that feel like standouts to me. Mm-hmm. And with this one being the most like Teflon soundtrack for me, which I've talked about a lot. Like, it is just the limits of what a chorus can do for me. A literal chorus, not a chorus as a song structure, but choral arrangements.
Yeah.
You know, so. But I recognize that I'm the outsider in that. When people talk about weeping at Bloodborne songs, like, I realize that I am the outlier there. So, I didn't recognize it, but it'll be interesting to revisit it. I will go back and listen to it now with that in mind and listen to Abridus's. The range, when I was talking about, just when we were talking about knocking off the bridge, this is another Demon Souls quote as well, because not only does this boss fight mechanically echo Maneater a little bit with you being knocked off the bridge, but having that little area at the end of the bridge, that little circle kind of fountainy thing. I don't know if it's actually a fountain, but that's right out of Maneater boss fight. And that, I think, is kind of signaling us that we, even though we had our explicitly Latria area, we're going to another area that is recalls that kind of scholarship and flavor a little bit after this. So to my mind, it kind of signals that a little bit.
Yeah.
As we're going to go into the archives. But that's really him. Is this the first time
we've seen the serpent angels statues?
It's not the last time, but I think this is the first time they show up.
Yeah, I didn't make a note of them, because that's more of a Grand Archives kind of thing to my mind.
Okay, cool. Yeah. I just remember looking at those and going like, what? What does this mean? And the answer is probably nothing. So
those could be the angels of Lothric. It's weird for the serpents who are imperfect dragons, who also worship, whose line, you know, goals should be in line with Londor. Given what we know about the serpents, for them to be this again, Anchorman news fight team is great, you know, great analogy for this, because the serpents are another factor that showed up, and I know what they are, but their motivations don't make any sense. And then that ends up being the Lothric castle. Any wrap-up thoughts anybody has on this bad boy?
I really like this area. I actually had fun playing through it. I probably sounded a little bit too negative about it because of Dark Souls 3 really leaves me hanging with some of the lore stuff. But mechanically, and I don't think that this is brought up enough, just generally we're talking about Dark Souls 3, like, it's so much fun to play. And like a lot of these encounters, we kind of skimmed over, but there's a couple of like ambush encounters where they put a crystal lizard there and like you chase after it and like three assassin dudes drop down. Like, all of that stuff is really, really fun. And like, it makes it like a fun, interesting, like, just to play through. It's only when I start trying to peel away that layer to get into the lore stuff that I start feeling kind of on it. So I enjoyed it a lot. I think the boss is great. Like, I think it's fun. I probably should put it in a top tier Souls area list, but I had to do the worst ones. So.
Yeah. I'll throw in with mine. A play first area, like play first, lore second, is not a bad thing. You know, like a lot of those are kind of standouts for me. See, like Sens or something like that. There's nothing you can really draw from that. But, you know, I think that this kind of carries the weight of expectation around the idea that we are actually like we're moving toward the center. And at the very center of this, we should be finding more answers as opposed to more questions. And this whole conversation has probably revealed that like that's not going to happen. I like the Grand Archives better in that regard, as, you know, something that is kind of tonally in line with what I want out of something this late in the game. But it's hard not to, like, even if you look at this from a pure play kind of point, like, that battlement run is really cool. It's hard for me not to compare it to, like, that final run up to the Penetrator in 1-3. I know that's unfair. I know that they're different games. They're trying to do the same thing, though, or at least it is a direct quote, and it is them, you know, inviting that comparison. And so I look at this and I say, I had fun with this. Like, I loved any of the encounter design that didn't have to do with these very overpowered kind of Red Eye Knight kind of people. It just kind of, I look at this as a relative high for again, encounter design and enemy placement kind of stuff. But like, I don't know that it rises up in the series for me personally.
Yeah, I would probably fall pretty similar to that. Yeah. Like it has a very nice middle. You know, that section that we're praising, that kind of run up to that, is actually very good. And very, very cool. It just bookended by some frustration for what to me is kind of a lackluster boss, you know, and then just suffers by comparison, you know, and even suffers, you know, we talk about it in comparison to 1-3, which is like made my top levels list. Like, I love that level. Even to the Grand Archives, which does some very similar things as far as ambushes and the like, mm-hmm. With the thralls and stuff. And to my end, my eye is just a more interesting environment to explore.
Yeah.
You know, even just from like just a visually kind of thing, like castles are not as played out as churches in this game, but it's like the second thing we're going to run into, you know, as far as just kind of visual, like my eyes just kind of running off the page.
Yeah. Especially castles that are explicitly gameplay, mm-hmm. you know, or just come across as gameplay spaces versus something like Castle Kanehurst, right? Like we know castles can be done fascinatingly.
Yeah. And that was so fantastic because of contrast more than anything.
Yeah.
Like that contrasted with the rest of the game. This like doesn't, like the kind of visual set we've done in the High Wall, like mm-hmm. largely, yeah. you know, and so
it's
there's
got
a little
a cool
bit
of, twist like, with the light, you know?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Like that. And that's really phenomenal. And again, similar to last episode with Untended Graves, where as much as there's some frustration about not having answers to the questions, like I wouldn't trade in the first time I came down Ten of Graves. I wouldn't trade in the first time I saw the skybox.
Yeah,
in this area when you come back, like that's a truly great moment, and it's what elevates Dark Souls 3 to being like a really great game, despite the fact that I think it's narratively a mess. It's just now that you know the play part of it has kind of worn off for me a little bit, partly because my build is suddenly suboptimal, like that is struggling in the late game in a way it wasn't really in the early game, and partly just. You know, running against if this were Dark Souls 1 or 2, I would be on a total, I wouldn't have gone back to a dex build, mm-hmm. you know, for this when luck didn't work out, because there would be a lot of different, I would have a sorcery build, I would have a magic build, I'd have something that you could do, something different. The fact that I can't experience this in a new way, like I'm playing it with the same build I just played it through more or less, kind of makes some of the mechanical parts take the shine off of that. And then what I'm left mm-hmm. with is the story, you know, kind of environmental storytelling part.
Yeah.
Which is like not as strong for me.
Yeah. And that sucks because that felt like home for me.
Yeah.
You know, throughout a lot of the series up to this point.
Yeah. And spoiler, at least for my end, that's not going to get better in this season. Like the archives is pretty interesting, but we spend a lot of the archives outside in the castle.
Yeah.
So the next episode is going to have a lot of that same kind of stuff. The things actually inside the archives are pretty interesting. As a standalone thing, but don't, you know, give us the angel things we're going to run into and stuff are just going to kind of underline that for us. And then Archdragon Peak, which we'll get to, is a order of combat monks, mm-hmm. you know, like it's kind of interesting to see visually and stuff. And there are parts of that level I enjoy quite a bit, but that kind of like feeling like it's adding up to something is never going to come back except possibly with the end boss of the next area. So anywho, that's about it. This area is a little bit of a bummer to me in retrospect. My first time through is one of my favorite areas in the game. So it has just only really suffered from coming back to it.
Well, it's only because we convinced ourselves it was bad because we hate Dark Souls 3 in profit from not liking it.
Yeah, exactly. It is. That's how you get listeners. Jeremy, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
We really appreciate it.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. I love doing this podcast.
We love having you on, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is super fun. It is, can you remind people where they can find your stuff online?
All right. You got about 20 minutes. 30.
Yes. Yep. Really push it. Be the Dark Souls 3 of plug sections, man. Like, we'll just be wondering why this is happening and have no good answers.
It'll have a good middle is what I'm looking for. And then kind of sticky bits on the end. So just prepare yourselves. You can find me on Twitter at JG Greer. I talk a lot of Souls talk. So if you want to come talk Dark Souls, come chat with me. I do a podcast called Don't Give Up Skeleton. If you enjoyed this conversation, this will be coming out Sunday. So, Gary's episode and Cole's episode both dropped on Wednesday of this previous week. So you can go to darkinsight.net/DGUS for Don't Give Up Skeleton and mm-hmm. go check out those episodes or whatever your podcatcher of course is. And, that's kind of it, I think. Dark Insight.net has everything.
Do me a favor and hide the play counts on those from the public because I don't want to see whose episode gets more.
Oh jeez.
Can you do that?
I think maybe you can on a paid plan from SoundCloud.
I didn't even think about that.
I dropped Patty and CJ's on the same day, so I wonder who has the most. I didn't even think about that. It's not a contest at all.
Yeah, I know. But I'm a petty and small man. I don't want to see that. I'd rather operate in. You do whatever you want to. I'm just joking. So
if you enjoyed this, go check out those two episodes. And if you like that, then I've done like 25 more interviews that are out with various people. Illusory Wall, I mentioned CJ and Patty, and also like a bunch of just random people. Like part of the idea of that podcast was to pull out people that don't normally get to talk about Dark Souls. And there's been some real interesting people. So.
Yeah. Yeah, that's me. Yeah, that is all recommended. You should check out all of Jeremy's stuff. And most germane to me is that you should check out Days of Future Cast, Jeremy and I's ongoing podcast that I think will ultimately end up being about the X-Men being adapted into other media. But it's starting out with just an examination of the X-Men animated series.
It's a very fun show to do. I watched X-Men 1 this weekend with my wife.
Oh, you actually did. Yeah.
And she kept asking me who Johnny Flame was. I don't know who Johnny Flame is. For some reason, she had in her head that Pyro from the first X-Men movie was Johnny Flame, which doesn't, as far as I can tell, doesn't exist in the Marvel Universe. So.
No, that's not Johnny Storm, and it's not Johnny Flame, like the famous biker who like hung out with the Fonz.
I didn't realize that there was a Johnny Flame that hung out with the Fonz, so I'll throw that one at her. Too,
confuse her for me, please.
But if you like X-Men chat like this, go to daysoffuturecast.com.
This is the kind of high quality content we're gonna provide.
I can say this as not only somebody who is disinterested from this, you know, like I'd like you to listen to stuff on the network that I contribute to, but I don't have any interest in this show. I listened to all four episodes that exist so far, and they're all really good.
Oh, thanks. Good. You listen in advance. You give yourself exclusives.
Yeah. Fuck it, man.
Exclusive content. I
pay for hosting. Come on. Yes.
But thank you for having me, and thank you for putting up with an extra long admin for me, and I appreciate it.
Oh, it's not
over. This podcast is great.
Continue to go through it. If you like this show, and if you like supporting us, and the reason why there's Days of Future Cast, we didn't just roll out of bed one day and decide to do an X-Men animated series podcast. Actually, we did, but the reason why we actually decided to put it out,
the reason why we waited so long.
Yes, exactly. I was trying to frame it more positively. Cool. If you go to is because of patrons. So if you go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv, you can give us a little bit of money a month. We reached that goal, and that is what allowed us to do this podcast. We have other goals, including the next one for Radio Free Midworld, Cole's rotating roundtable discussion about the Dark Tower series. And we have future goals even past that. You get cool stuff for supporting us. It is not something you do just out of the kindness of your heart, even though we do know you're kind. And either or, whatever reason you want to do it, we appreciate it.
We recently announced some restructures to that, which will be of interest to people who are fans of this show. So you can go check those out. We also dropped the State of the Union kind of thing on this feed. So if you listen to that, you kind of know the score. All of that takes effect November the 1st.
I think that's and then ratings, reviews, things like that on iTunes are really appreciated. If you have feedback about the next area, about the archives, hit us up at duckfeed.tv/contact. That is a good place for that.
Please try and do single responses about single areas. So if you're like, man, I've got thoughts about Grand Archives and Arch Dragon Peak, I know this is a pain. It is much easier to not have either side of that lost if you just do two different messages.
Yeah, at the same time is fine. Instead of doing a page break, end it, send it, and then just do another one. Just makes things easier for us and less likely to get lost in the shuffle. I think that's probably about it. What should they do until next time, Cole?
There's no dialogue associated with this area that I could find. At least that came
to... It's going to be tricky.
That came to mind. So, I don't know. Nobody suspects the butterfly?
Nobody suspects the butterfly. Umbasa.
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 And we all pray that we will have far more soon. Some of our landings were desperate adventures. We are now prepared to meet the inevitable counterattacks with power and with confidence.
My name is Gary Butterfield.
My name is Cole Ross.
And I'm Jeremy Greer.
And you're listening to Bonfireside Chat. It is a appendix butterfly.
Oh, no.
Sugar, baby.
I'm so sorry. You've got appendix butterflies.
Butterflies in my stomach, but now that I'm older, it's all appendix all the time.
I used to have that, too, but I stopped eating fucking butterflies.
yeah, that also helps.
yeah, today we're talking about your responses to Lothric Castle, and as you heard, Jeremy Greer has stuck around,
yes, bucking the trend for this season, kind of imposing himself on this. That's fine.
It's not like you guys said no. Do you need me, Cole? Okay. I see how it is. We're just telling lies about Jeremy Greer. I see how this works. Tell lies about Duck Feed TV.
Yeah, that's being a dick. So we don't have any follow-up from the previous ones, but we do have responses, and the first one is Mr. Church saying fuck slashulons and stabulons.
That's the weird, this place is full of slashulons and stabulons.
Yep. Those glowing great swords.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. I have a much harder time with slashulons and stabulons than smashulons. Mm. I eventually understood smashulons. Like, I'm at one with the smashulons.
Yeah. Well, the smashulons, they almost always, it feels, attack overhead, opposed to the slashulons, which will, they just have a much wider kind of sweep for their stuff. Yeah.
It's also their buff is not just a straight damage upgrade. It gives it those little interesting bomb mines that they lay.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually, you know what? In retrospect, that is maybe one of my favorite enemies in this game.
Yeah.
I like those guys a lot. They're really interesting. That buff is really cool. You know, not just making something one shot you, but actually, you know, creating these little hazards in the environment.
Yeah.
Those things are great. Go smash Elons.
You have earned your name.
Yeah, you've earned it, baby. If I ever found a high school, it's going to be the Portland suburb smash Elons. So, as the soccer team.
It's just going to be a crazy blown out JPEG screenshot.
Yeah. Michael says, bereft of any potential context from Dark Souls 1 or 2, Lothric Castle felt like a hero legend I was stepping into late. A harrowing extended duel upwards through an abandoned royal library, being challenged by a band of evil adventurers. A violently roiling sky full of fires as I fought through a small army. And of course, slaying a duo of evil princes. This area makes me feel like it's trying to make me the hero in a story that has never been published. Yeah, that's interesting.
I think Michael did the same thing I did, which was assume that this area and the area that's around the Grand Archives were the same area.
Yeah,
because I always forget that there's that whole Grand Archives bit in the middle, because you spend so much time doing castle stuff in the Grand Archives.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense to cut that off. We've had questions about that too, about how we break it apart. But I think that it is part of the same upward thrust, right? You know, we're going up there to grab Lothric by the scruff of his scrawny little neck. Bring him
by the scrote of his neck.
Yep, by his neck scrote.
Yep. .com. it is an epic feeling to this.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it doesn't, we talked a lot in the last episode, without that feeling of conclusion that I want, but there is, a sense of scale to it, largely brought by the sky.
Yeah.
As we said, the actual sense of danger.
Yeah. Neckscrote.com is available.
Oh, hey.
Hey.
My other
that
high school.
That seems like a good use of $15 to hover.com.
Yep. We're not sponsored by them. Don't say that.
Yeah. Oh, $15 to Jeremy's domain service.com. I'm going to quickly go register.
Yeah. Jeremy, do you want to hit us with Brian?
Sure. Brian says, for all the lingering questions, dangling plot threads, and unfinished ideas in Dark Souls 3, I think Pus of Man bothers me the most. An enemy introduced in the opening cutscene, codified in the Ludex boss fight, and made incredibly dangerous in the first level, it sure feels like the Pus of Man ended up a wet fart from a story perspective. In Lothric Castle, we meet the climax of the Pus of Man storyline, two humongous undead dragons, animated by the sludge, but they end up being nothing more than guards for treasure. I just can't justify in my mind why these enemies were built up so much when their significance seems negligible.
Yeah, they really do make you believe in those first couple of hours of play that this is going to be Dark Souls 3, The Secret of the Ooze.
Yep. Yeah, I kept expecting other things to turn into Pus of Man kind of throughout the game. But again, there's almost none of it during the entire middle section.
It's exclusively
Lothric thing. Yeah.
And like we talked about that to its benefit, right? Like, okay, these guys are seated. That is a poor choice of words on my part, but I'm going to go with it. They're seated and they're not. They don't just kind of like pop out willy nilly. But for those first 3 hours, they make you think that they will.
Yeah.
Then when that goes away and you come back to it, it does ring hollow. Again, another poor choice of words.
Yeah, because here there's none of those like those things where it's like, oh, any enemy could be this thing. Mm-hmm. The two, you run into four of them here, two of them down in the moat, which are just going to automatically proc as soon as you get anywhere near them. And mm-hmm. then the dragons, which are this entirely different thing that we never associated with them.
Right.
So you don't have that kind of fun, like any enemy I could turn into could be a pain pinata. Good choice of words.
Pinata.
That actually sounds too much like a word to me. Like pinata sounds like something that would actually translate to something I don't know what it is.
It sounds like some kind of like weird martial art.
Yeah. Oh, like Gymkata.
Yep. Yeah. Sorry. That's one of the two times a year that I think about Gymkata. The other time is I will occasionally look at a set of stairs and think, huh, I wonder if somebody could go down that on their hands.
Yeah, I wonder if somebody could Gymkata this shit.
And then if an old Gymkataist would have to do a handstand on one of those little carts that goes up and down a wall for like old people.
I'm into it.
Yep. That shit drives them up the fucking wall. Yeah.
Yes. Cool.
Yep. So Zane writes, and this is a numbered list. Number one, I loved the run up to the castle proper. After fighting the dancer and feeling overconfident, Dark Souls once again reminds you that you can always die to a few well-placed minions. Number two, I'm not very perceptive, so I was halfway to the pre-dragon bonfire before I noticed these red things in the distance. I hadn't picked up on these undead tree things earlier in the game, so imagine my surprise when I see in the background this gigantic floating circulatory system. I was awestruck. Had Dark Souls taken a Bloodborne and 180'd my understanding of the game's lore? Was the final area of the game going to be a fantastic voyage through Prince Lothric's body cavities?
Wow.
And then I look around, dozens of these things menacingly drifting toward me. It was one of the best moments of the series for me, even if I was way off the mark.
Yeah. Yeah, these things actually converged on you.
No.
Or something like that. Like they haven't really done flying enemies since Demon Souls,
right?
To any there's like little hovering enemies, a couple of leap attack things in Bloodborne, but like flying enemies are something they've more or less gotten rid of. Mm-hmm. But like that would actually be pretty terrifying.
Yeah,
I'm fine with what they do too. It's just an atmospheric background thing. Mm-hmm. But like I like the idea of going through this and thinking maybe they're going to actually come at you.
Yeah. So lest anybody who listened to the main episode think that we're like down on this, like aesthetically, the Pilgrim Butterflies are 110% a win. It's one of the most striking images that I've seen in the series. I just wish there was more to it.
There's actually everything. The only thing that even names them or refers to them is the Dragon Slayer Soul.
Yes.
Like there's no other item description that mentions them. Mm-hmm. So everything that we have to work on from those guys comes from the fact that they're called Pilgrim Butterflies. And then just environmental clues. Yeah.
And I've seen some like point. Screenshot kind of diary showing like, oh, there's like a racked body here. And, mm-hmm. I love kind of the comparison, like, oh, this is like a circulatory system. Like that's kind of cool. But like, yeah, it's mostly like that is the only textual evidence that we have about them.
Yep.
Yeah.
Dylan says, to me, Lothric Castle has more bad design decisions than any other required area. I still don't know if I'm going through it correctly, since I either have to tank boatloads of fire damage or spend too much time shooting the dragon full of arrows to cross the courtyard. Then what would be an okay boss fight is muddied by those annoying dragon skeleton things that have killed me with an off-screen shot more often than I care to admit. And finally, why is the Warriors of Sunlight Covenant locked behind the halfway point in the game when you get the talisman so early on? Rog! I don't know if I pronounced that.
That's a good point, because I kept looking for a place to drop off my sunlight medals to get whatever covenant rewards I was going to get, and like just gave up. And so I was like, okay, well, at some point I will find it.
It really makes me wonder if this was always meant, you know, again, like we never know anything about development or anything, but you know, it kind of plays into us talking about the weapons, you know, finding weapon classes in the castle. Like, was this always meant to be unlocked when it was, you know, because technically you can get, it's, you know, more than halfway. He says it calls it the halfway point of the game. It's like the 80% mark of the game, or can be the 30% mark if you kill the dancer early. And was that ever meant to be more viable and less of like a challenge run thing? I don't know. It is really kind of confusing.
Yeah.
It sounds like Dylan might not have found the moat entrance to the over the bridge.
Yeah.
Which I could see that being pretty frustrating. Mm-hmm. And I'm happy at least somebody had the same problems with the boss fight that I did with the the zaps.
Yeah.
Zapulons.
The Zapulons. I'll take over Cameron's, who says, Lothric Castle, both visually and mechanically, feels pretty damn cool. Pilgrim butterflies make for an astounding skyline, and rounding a corner and looking up to see the dark sign sun for the first time was an honestly jaw-dropping moment for me. Even better was reaching the dragon barracks for the first time. I was home alone and so had turned up the volume on both my TV and the podcast I was listening to while playing. With no one else around, my cat had decided to be affectionate and sit on my lap. All of a sudden, boom, crash! Down came two awesome-looking dragons, and up goes my cat, clawing her way to the top of my head as she freaked out at the sudden noise. Oh. It's certainly a moment I won't forget. Oh, also, fuck those Lothric knights with the great swords. Bloody hell.
Agreed on the last. I just feel bad for your cat.
I feel bad for your head. Like, that couldn't have felt good when she started clawing up there.
That could have been worse. Like, have you ever had, like, a cat, like, claw your dick real good?
No.
No.
Guys. Okay. Like, I've had a cat on my lap.
I've had it done real bad.
Yes.
Does that count?
That's so right. I've had a cat, like, you know, get startled and jump off of my lap and kind of rake my lap.
Okay.
In a way that drew blood on my front puppet, like in a way that I'm not like super into. So
it didn't awaken something.
No. No, it wasn't like a drop of blood then hit my boxers and then like animated my boxers or anything. And luckily, like, I didn't lose my dick either. It wasn't like a catch fever kind of thing.
Right.
But I have had that happen where, like, so if a cat is on my lap, I will usually position it so it's not, you know, if it does need to leave in a hurry, and that can sometimes happen because of dragons, but also can just happen because, like, a cat will remember what it has to do and decide to, like, run to another room for no reason. But I will position their claws, like, purely over my meaty thighs if something's going to get scratched.
Yep.
So,
as someone who's just recently drew blood from his front puppet, like, that doesn't sound very fun at all. Like, remove these caps from your lats. That's all I'm saying. Get these cats out of your lap.
It's so good. It's like I need shin guards, but for my thighs.
You need to wear a cup for kitty bonding time.
Yeah, kitty cup. Like a pitch product.
Just plastic pan front inserts, like plates of armor, like baseball shin guards. Yeah, exactly. Louis writes, has anyone had the two dragons on the bridge aggro correctly? On my first playthrough, only the right one ever breathed fire. On my second, they were both completely inert. I think I might have experienced them the correct way one time. On the one hand, I've never been a fan of the dragon on the bridge gimmick, but on the other, I'd hate to think that I'm not experiencing content correctly due to a glitch or oversight. I think we spent a lot of time in the episode talking about how that is both a suboptimal fight and arrangement, you know, just like from a pure design point, but also technically, like, who fucking knows what makes them go to sleep?
I don't know. I think Jeremy might have been right when it's like pulling the lever to open the door.
Yeah.
Like that. I mean, that rings true, but I don't totally know.
Yeah.
Be a illusory wall question, maybe. If it is, if it is consistent.
At illusory wall on Twitter.
Yeah.
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 It just, it doesn't matter if it feels broken technically, it's broken technically.
Yeah. Like, yeah. It's something's not going on. And even if it is, it does it when the door opens. Why?
Yep.
Like, why, yeah, why are these illusory dragon...
That doesn't make any more sense at all.
Dragon pus of men ever, like, letting their dragon form go to sleep. You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's infuriating. John says, I find Lothric Castle pretty uninteresting place. It has little hidey holes that have a couple of secrets, but then again, every level does. It doesn't really set itself apart from any castle level I've seen in the Dark Souls series, and I would say Smoldering Lake has more flavor to it. The wyverns at the entrance of the castle proper do intrigue me, though. You only find them on the High Wall and Archdragon Peak. Is it the Nameless King? Is the Nameless King pro Lothric because Guinevere is there, or are they the vanguard of Irithyll's forces? Are they trying to break the king's sister out and away from Lothric and Irithyll? Why are they infected with the pus of man? Has the Nameless King deliberately been infected, or has he deliberately infected the lands of Lothric? The Dragon Knight armor is also mysterious due to the chaos trees that float by and shoot you during the combat to protect the armor. Why are they bringing this armor to life? Clearly, they are helping Lothric as a barrier to the invading army. So is this the reason for Lothric's army destroying the demons as a way to get the chaos flame to combat the profane flame found in Irithyll? So many questions.
The chaos flame is dead.
The chaos flame is dead. Yeah. It's explicit. You know, and that could be a scholar style like remap could say like said to be dead or something like that. But
yeah,
like,
yeah, the demons, like, it is dead from here. It has been moved away. And this is a place that is dying in its absence or something like that.
Like, it's so they went out of their way to make the chaos flame die. Like, yeah. You just see mountains and mountains of corpses. You know, it's like it is so underlined 1,000 times. Yeah. I don't think these are the same dragons as in Archdragon Peak. I think these are illusions or something like that. Yeah. I think the Archdragon Peak dragons are the closest thing we have to real dragons in the game.
Yeah.
Yeah, like in Dark Souls 1, you have like the Everlasting Dragon, which looks pretty significantly different from like all the undead dragons you find. And I kind of feel like that difference is here as well. Like Archdragon is like Everlasting Dragon territory, whereas Archdragon Peak has the Everlasting Dragons, whereas here these are like weird medieval science dragons that somebody invented when they were trying to make a real doll.
Right, which is not the same thing.
Don't think that's going to get away. You're not going to get away with that.
I forgot about, because this turning a pus of man into a dragon also is apparently unrelated to the half dragons we found in Irithyll Dungeon, too.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking A.
Oh, yeah. There's so many fucking dragons around, dude.
Many different goddamn reasons and ways to turn people into dragons in this game. Miyazaki, no.
Too many dragons.
Like, I like dragons more than average, more than the next guy. Like,
more
Jesus
than
Christ.
Me, certainly.
Like more than Cole, more than, you know, more than most. Like a poll of the first 100 people in the street, more than most. But like, God damn it. So yeah, it is. Those things do add more questions and provide no answers. No.
Yeah.
J-Dog.
So is it me on Connor?
Jay the real dog Greer, let's do it.
Connor says, I've always taken advantage of the obtuse mode of storytelling in these games as a backdrop to craft my own little stories, owing largely to my inability to decipher the canonical narrative. More fun than actually doing this, however, was creeping back through the game to try and lace together support for my little ideas. Dark Souls 3 has been great for giving me little sets to enact my fantasies upon, but much less great at providing through lines with the rest of the areas, creatures, characters, and so on. Anything I find that sparks my interest seems to bob solitarily amidst all the flotism of ideas with only the vaguest traces of a form to connect them. The sinuous, nightmarish angel beings littering the horizon with their dark side branded upon the sky itself evokes all the best imagery from the series, but to where exactly does that lead? I'm looking forward to your episode to hopefully shed some light for me. Sorry, Canner.
So sorry.
is gnawing at me in the same way it did for DS2. I don't need it spelled out for me, but I do need some occasional reassurances that I'm not playing hide and seek with someone who stopped playing but didn't bother to tell me.
What a good metaphor that is.
Yep.
I really like that. Playing hide and seek with Miyazaki only. He stopped playing Demon Souls was like my favorite thing to think about now.
Playing hide and seek with somebody who stopped playing without telling me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, God, I'm gonna say that like once a month for the rest of my life. Like, that is such a good, that feels like that's the kind of like thing. I've never heard that expression before, but it just feels like it applies to like so much.
Yeah.
That's really good, Connor. That just maybe him referring to the pilgrim butterflies as angels. Just also, I didn't consider that, and I wonder.
Yeah.
You know, I haven't really seen that as a through line, but like, huh? I mean, they're supposedly called something else, but like, yeah,
they're called butterflies. And I'm so ready for like, you know, like I like the moonlight crystal butterfly things from Dark Souls 1. You know, mm-hmm. I'm down for it. Like, I wanted to see them as butterflies.
Yeah. Even though I don't want a Seath connection
right
with them, really. Like, I don't want them to be, because then that connects them to Seath directly, and like,
we have enough of Seath that.
Already, we have too much of that.
Seath are greedy. You got yours.
Yeah, like this many different little Seath, like Logan crystal magic connections to things.
Yeah,
is already too much for me. So yeah, yeah. I don't know, but that's interesting.
That's less of my affection for Seath than that particular thing, but I like the idea of a gigantic butterfly.
Yeah, me too. Butterflies are super creepy.
Yep.
The way that like when they land on something and then flap their wings slowly, like they're breathing.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of like the creepiest, coolest things that can happen.
Yep. So. There's a bunch of monarch butterflies that live in a bush behind my house, and they're kind of just always there being creepy. I mean, yeah. they were up until a month ago, but
yeah, when you took care of them.
Right. I mean, until they like migrated to Mexico, but they'll be, they won't be back.
They migrated to your stomach.
Yeah. Finally, here we have Ragavan, who says, this is a great area with plenty of callbacks, and it literally rises to a climax. The dragons guarding bridges, the winged knights, and the warriors of Sunlight Covenant, finally, were all great beats to play through. But what I strongly remember from this zone was the boss battle. One of the first things that you see when you enter this zone is the giant pilgrim butterflies in the sky, and you're left with questions. You traverse the zone with them, always soaring in the sky, and eventually get to the boss. The first time I got there, I was extremely excited because I could make out the wings of the butterfly in the boss arena, and got mentally geared to fight one of these. I changed to magic resist gear, walked in, and got destroyed by Axteen. Love you, Dark Souls. Never change. Okay, everybody, from now on, finish out your messages with what you would write in Dark Souls 3's yearbook. Maybe don't
see you
do
next
that,
year,
but
Dark
maybe
Souls.
Do. Hags, have a great summer.
Yeah. 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 Yeah, I didn't... Didn't gear up for it or anything like that, but I thought maybe I was going to fight one of those things too.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of the stuff like didn't land for me as well as it did for Ragavan, but
yeah,
which is fine.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have very much to add to it. Like, to that, the response. I wonder what fighting one of those things would actually be like too. You know, that kind of caster fight, because I'm in the minority apparently who likes the moonlight butterfly fight in Dark Souls 1. Most people kind of hate that fight.
Yeah, I mean, we're in good company. Jeremy, how about you?
Yeah, where are you at?
Awesome.
On that? Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, when people hate it, it's because it's easy, and I don't hate boss fights when they're easy. Like, that's never going to be something that makes me hate something. So
I will give one caveat to that, which would be that fighting the moonlight butterflies in the crystal caves later is like one of the most awful things in the world, and I've never do it. Like, it's just bad. But the actual boss fight is 100% my jam.
Yeah, and there's no reason to do it either.
Yep.
Like, it's like you just get nothing for like fighting the crystal cave ones. That was a missed opportunity, I think.
Yeah.
Pretty seriously. Thanks everybody for writing in. If you have anything to say about the Grand Archives or Arch Dragon Peak, please send them as separate messages at duckfeed.tv/contact.
Yeah. We're going to have more details about the way the rest of the season looks as the details about the DLC come out. I mean, obviously we're going to be playing this by the time this episode comes out, like between episode and extrasode, that's when the DLC happens. I imagine Gary, you and I are going to get through it pretty quick.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And we'll know more about that and where it should fall in relation to the series. So much is up in the air, especially as it relates to the second, more meaty DLC.
Yeah. Yeah. We still have at least one more. We have several of those kind of top and bottom special episodes I did that are going to trickle out. And then we have at least one more other special episode, similar to our PvP episode, coming out at some point between now and the end of our Dark Souls 3 coverage. Then we have quite a few Souls likes to cover. So the show's not going anywhere, and we have plans. So we are at least solid through like another year or so, feels like.
do you want to know who's going to be on the next episode for the Grand Archives?
We don't know. Okay, it is a little bit. We've got our, I've got a couple of people I'm going to check in with. We have our guest for the Arch Dragon Peak episode, but not the Grand Archives episode yet. So, we're not ready to announce it. Like, we have.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah. I figured you had people that you were talking to.
I'll tell you off air.
Okay.
I try not to announce people if they're not confirmed, because then, you know, I don't want them to ever have to hear, like, somebody on Twitter be like, oh, we thought you were supposed to do this.
Yeah,
you
know? That's shitty.
Yeah. It's just a general rule. If people are listening to this, never do that on our account. Like, people have asked, people ask us often, like, when are you going to get ENB on? And, like, I've probably sent him, like, probably 5 different attempts throughout the course of the show to get on. I just think it's not in the cards, which is fine. Like, it's totally, you know, nobody has a responsibility to do this. Nobody owes us anything. But I've had people kind of, you know, in response to that, kind of seek him out. And it's cool if you want him to do it and you just kind of say it, but don't position it as if you're like championing us.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want anybody to be, you know, we don't need you to do that. Yeah, we appreciate the sentiment.
Yes, we do. Oh. But nobody should ever feel compelled on our behalf or otherwise to do this.
Yeah. We're just grateful people do it at all.
Yep.
Thanks for sticking with us, Jeremy. Do you want to quickly maybe give the 20 minute version of your where people can find you rather than the 45 minute version?
I'll be back later.
Always trying to censor me. I mean, come on. you took away 30 whole minutes from the main episode. You can find me on Twitter at JG Greer. I do several podcasts, one with Gary Butterfield called Days of Future Cast, where we talk about X-Men and X-Men related media. It's very funny and it's new to the Duckfeed Network, so you should definitely check that out. I do Don't Give Up Skeleton, which is a podcast all about interviewing people and how they found the Soul series. If you like Dark Souls and if you like podcast, you should listen to that podcast. Both Gary and Cole's episodes are out. So if you like those guys and you want it, that's a good starting point. Otherwise, there's probably 30 or so episodes that you can kind of pick and choose from. And I also do Dark Insight, which is a gaming podcast every other week. So, and if you like accents, boy, U.S. Southern accent like myself, and then a guy from London and a guy from New Zealand. It is a hot mess. So enjoy.
And I do like accents. Thanks, Jeremy, for sticking around. Thanks, everybody, for listening. If you want to support the show, show. He's done.
Okay,
cool. I can keep going. I've got more stuff.
I'm back. Sorry, I went and got a drink.
It's okay. If you want to support the show, the best way to do so is to go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv. We really appreciate it. You can find details about what that looks like if you actually go to that website.
Yep.
And I think that's probably about it.
That support is important. If we didn't say it before, duckfeed.tv/contact if you have those things to say.
Mm-hmm. I think that's probably good.
Cool.
Really do appreciate it.
So
thank you guys very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Minimal... Oh, wait, I've got an Etsy page. Hold on.
Okay. Minimal deleted scenes. But Umbasa.
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 And we all pray that we will have far more soon.
How are you doing, Jeremy?
I'm good. I mean, if I sound weird, I'm in my back room because I've had issues with my Wi-Fi, so I wanted to be on a LAN connection. So if I sound echoey, that's why. I'm like sitting on the floor on top of pillows. I feel like a college student that can't afford furniture.
You sound like you're reclining on pillows.
Yeah.
Well,
you sound recumbent.
That's my middle name. I don't know if you guys know that. Jeremy Recumbent.
You're a Corb. Hop on recumbent bike.
Totally me.
Corpse.
Yeah.
You guys are really loud.
And I'm probably not going to watch X-Men until after PRG next weekend. But then
I knew I was going to watch it like 4 times, so I just went ahead and did one.
Yeah. I almost bought it yesterday. I was at a Goodwill and they had the collection on DVD, and I was like, this is $5. It'll probably be less than renting all of these movies, but the collection is only the first two. I think they collected it early. Like the second one came out and then they put out the collection.
the David Hayter collection.
Exactly. And I wanted to get the third one and it looked like there was a picture of Wolverine. I was like, oh, this probably has the Wolverine, which of course we'll end up doing that at some point as well.
really? Do we have to?
I want to do the Yeah, the Wolverine with Gambit. I've never seen the second one of those.
It's not good. Hey, have you ever wanted to see a Wolverine movie where for most of it he doesn't have any powers?
Okay, great.
Yeah. Is that the one where he has
It's like Wolverine Born. It's like Jason Bourne except for Wolverine. Like it's just yeah. I don't like that movie.
No.
I'm way into it. I've never seen it. I bet you it's bad. But I would love to talk about it. So
this ginger ale has caffeine in it. I've never heard of such a thing.
Interesting.
I know.
That seems like something you probably shouldn't be drinking at 8 o'clock at night.
I know, right? But it's the ginger ale I bought, and God damn it, I want some ginger ale. So
the ginger ale you'll go home with.
Yeah.
Dance with the one you brought.
Yeah.
You guys wanna do this?
Yes, sir. Let's do it.